I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of June 8, 2010. The Pledge of Allegiance by Councilmember Clay, please.
Now please rise and join me. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Clay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Here.
Mayor Fonzie?
Here.
All present.
I'd like to entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second. Go ahead.
Moved by Councilmember O'Malley and seconded by Councilmember Bayrou. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Bayrou?
What's typed there? A .0831.
Okay. Very good. Was there anyone else that would like to pull an item? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, do I have a motion
move
for
approval?
Second.
Move approval.
Okay, motion by Councilmember Clay, second by Councilmember Bayrou. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you, Marcia. And now for our update from the city manager.
Mayor, members of the council, I have several things to update you on today, a longer report. On Colony Square, I spoke with Mission Bank yesterday. The project remains on budget and within schedule. They will start getting us quarterly reports on the loan information. We're encouraged about the progress and anticipate a November theater opening, and the Colony Square developers have retained a commercial broker, Pacifica, to lease the retail space. They have some interest, and we're optimistic about filling that space in short order. In budget news, many of us attended last week's economic forecast, which reaffirmed what we've been expecting. Our December estimates and trends are staying on course. While they anticipate 2010 could be a good year for Atascadero, there's still a long recovery ahead. Atascadero is fortunate to have commercial projects underway, and interest is still building. Our quarterly report shows a reduction in total expenditures over $2 million from the same period last year. That means we're really doing great. We are keeping costs down, and our financial policies are working. We must remain vigilant. We're still using reserves to provide city services. We've been stretching our staff and resources to provide the same level of services we did in 2006. We just can't maintain the pace. We need to concentrate on core services and work together cooperatively and avoid detours that may come up as we work. In the Rite Aid project, we completed our final review of the project yesterday, and I believe issued a certificate of occupancy today. The store is nearly ready to open, and we anticipate a grand opening of about July 1st. Round Table Pizza, we anticipate will start reconstruction on the old Cowgirl building in July, and Cowgirl has already begun work on their new location. You have flexibility with the appeal and future funding. So we are seeking the assistance of Senator Boxer and Congressman McCarthy to make the request. We're trying to have a media event in late summer, early August, to sort of kick that political effort off. The construction fencing will be going up before school starts in the fall. This week, notices are going out to school children and other affected people about the closing of the East Mall adjacent to the administration building and half of Palma in front of the building. The closures will occur this summer as we install the fencing. And on another good piece of news, Oak Grove 2, which is Track 2640, one of the projects, a dormant projects at the north end of El Camino. The bonding company for the track has worked with Russ Thompson, our city attorney, Brian Pirick, and have developed a takeover agreement whereby they plan to complete the subdivision improvement and get that project moving again. The work will be performed by Michael Frederick Paving, and it moves one of our dormant projects forward. We're hopeful this solution will work with other dormant projects. I also wanted to point... Is my PowerPoint thing going to work? I also have an update, some information about our restaurant stimulus. And Steve Martin, on our behalf, has conducted some interviews of the restaurants that have been involved. Can you shift me through, or how do I do that?
Received on our end and everyone else's end as well. I just think that when you're coming to town visiting, you're looking for somewhere to eat. You're not bringing your own food, so they're going to be looking for all different ways of finding it through whether it's internet or in hotels or in the lobby or asking people. So just the more information that we can give them, the better chance they have to stay in town and stay with us and eating here. And I think it's definitely success and. To even if we could do more meetings and different things, just brainstorm and see what is working for everyone, what's not working, and just what advertising venues have been working for everyone else. And just I think it helps to get all those kind of brains in the same room and talking about things and what works and what doesn't work.
And that's my report. We're excited about the restaurant stimulus, and of course there are other stimulus programs as well. And it was just a nice to be able to get this video together today.
Thank you, Mr. McKinney. Any questions for Mr. McKinney? Very good. Let's move on to our public hearings. Our first, community forum. And I believe we have Mr. Shively here. Would you go ahead first? If you would like to speak, go ahead and line up behind him.
There? Okay, there we are. Hi, Mayor and Council and City staff. My name is Steve Shively. I'm the pastor at Calvary Chapel in Atascadero, and I want to open the meeting or the public forum part with prayer. Before we do that, July is coming on us real soon, and this year, July 4th, is on a Sunday. And our church, Calvary Chapel, is having church in the park at the Atascadero Lake Park. And I want to invite everyone in the community. And indeed, Lord, it's your kindness that leads us to repentance, Lord. And so we just thank you for who you are and just your great love for us, for sending your son, Jesus Christ, to make a way of salvation for us. And tonight, God, I just want to thank you, God, for our city, for our city council. And I just want to pray, God, that you would endow them with wisdom, with knowledge, God, with, Lord, just good decision-making, God, for the citizens of our city here, Lord. I know there's just a lot of things going on, and we need your help. And also tonight, Lord, want to pray for those that just need work, Lord, as we know that where the economy is, there's many who are still without employment, and we just want to ask you, Lord, to bring provision and to open doors here in our city for that need, God. And so again, bless this night, God. I pray that there would just be a unity here and, Lord, a respect, Lord, on each one that has opportunity to share, Lord. And so we just thank you for that. And again, I just give you praise and just pray these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Shively.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Kevin Campion. Excuse me. I am a partner to the City Park and Rec, and I work under Brady Cherry managing our local park here. It's called A-Town Park, also known as George Sabidi Memorial Skate Park. And I just wanted to take a minute, and I appreciate your allowing me to share with you a little bit about what we've been doing and our efforts to provide the community with programs. Working with Paula Anton, who is part of the Park and Rec Department here in Tascadero, we provide daily access free of charge through a partnership, public and private sector partnership, to the community. We offer after-school program, mentoring. We do skate church. It's actually starting here shortly every Tuesday night. We provide camps through Park and Rec seasonally. We offer a lounge area with a little, we call it a library. Books are donated and kids have free access and can take them with them and bring them back or take them with them. We have a little pro shop that's kind of more of a notoriety than an actual capitalist venue, but it's still there and adds a lot of flavor to what we do in the park. We have indoor and outdoor. The indoor is skate, the outdoor is BMX. I'm not doing it drawing a salary per se. I'm doing it because I believe Atascadero deserves programs like this, and I'm calling for any support from the community possible to keep these programs going because I think they're worthy. We've had a lot of support from the city, and I wanted to officially come here and thank all of you for your attendance and events, Bob, showing up regularly when we hold our contests or other venues there. We've done quite a bit of different things in the park, and we continue to try to expand the program. We're doing overnights this summer for youth where we'll actually have a lock-in program. We have a stack of camp mattresses and a little fire pit out back, and, you know, it's kind of Boy Scouts sitting around the fire stuff. And the one point that I wanted to bring to your attention and maybe ask for some support from the city, I've contacted Brady about this, and he's already engaged and started some of the process, but from city staff is we really need a sign directing people to the park and letting people know that this facility exists in our community. It's set back dramatically off the street, and it is difficult to see. Here's my one example. Yesterday, just by random luck, the president of Body Glove International, which is a very large surf skate brand, driving up the coast in his million-dollar diesel pusher, pulled off in Atascadero and sought out the park. And he had his entire staff with him, national sales manager, the president of the corporation. I mean, it was a loaded crew of executives. They wanted to see what our community was offering because they'd heard about it. And it was a real struggle for them to find the facility. And that really motivated me to come and just share with you not only the amazing thing that we have in our town that's rare between Los Angeles and San Francisco. There really isn't anything like what we're doing.
Mr. Campion, I appreciate what you're saying. I'd love to hear some more, but your time is up.
No problem.
Could I ask you one question?
Yes, you may.
Yeah. How's attendance been, period?
Attendance is great seasonally. It's right now end of school and very warm. It's a non-insulated building. We do have a huge fan in the building, but right now attendance is seasonally at its lowest point. As soon as school's out this week, it'll increase dramatically. But we've just recently done some improvements to the building to where we have cross ventilation. We didn't have that before, and so it's a lot better.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And Councilmember Bureau had a question.
I had a question. So how did they find it?
For the programs that you have down there, there's a lot more going on at the skate park besides skating. I know you have some discipline, help kids with homework and everything down there. And I have been to some of the events, and it's they're really great. And what you're doing is a major donation for our city, and I really appreciate it. I want to thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. You know what? I just want to take, I never take my hat off. I want to take my hat off to you guys because you guys are providing this. It's really, you deserve to be honored. There's so much stuff about Atascadero that's really under-acknowledged, and I believe that this program and this facility, it truly is unique. I'm in the skate industry. I travel the entire state, and there is really nothing like this. I'm really proud to be associated with it, so thank you very much.
Well, I got one other. Have you been able to get Bob on? Have you been able to get Bob on a skateboard yet?
No, but Bob has been there. Bob showed up basically representing City Council. He has been there at most events we've held over the last 12 months. So I really appreciate that.
Well, that'd be worth paying for, really, if you could.
I'll see what I can do. Thank you.
Hey, Jerry, you just made a statement there. I don't come cheap.
Madam Mayor, members of the City Council, neighbors. My name is Chuck Ward. I live in Atascadero. I'm a former Marine, and the reason I mention my veteran status, so to speak, is because May 28, I had the privilege of participating in the third annual Veterans Appreciation Luncheon that was held in San Luis Obispo. There was approximately 350 veterans there. Many were Purple Heart recipients. One of the objectives of this annual event is to select and honor the Veteran of the Year, not just from the city, not just from the county, but from the entire congressional district, which includes a chunk of Santa Barbara County and Monterey County. Approximately 35,000 plus veterans in this area. Each of the veteran organizations nominated a potential honoree. And this year's honors went to a local citizen, a longtime resident of Atascadero, a former Marine, Tim Haley. Now, Tim was a former combat veteran in Vietnam. He was wounded. He was awarded the Purple Heart along with other decorations. But I felt I should bring it to your attention that this is a hometown boy made good and got some long overdue recognition on this. So anybody has any questions? I've got 40 seconds left. I'll answer them.
Well, I go. Well, you didn't mention the fact that Tim Haley also was a very hard worker on the Veterans Memorial that we build out there, as were you, Chuck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the award of Veterans of the Year just doesn't come from one little thing. It comes from years and years of service to the community, and he exemplifies that.
We appreciate him.
And Chuck, since you've got a moment, isn't this the second year in a row that Atascadero has been recipient of the Veteran of the Year? I think it was Mr. Porter last year.
Last year, it was a fella who started the veterans group at Cuesta College. And he's a young fella. He's in the Navy and recently returned from the wars in the Middle East. And I don't know where he lived. If he lives here, that's great.
Well, I think you're referring to Ernie Porter, and Ernie Porter was also honored, and I don't know exactly what for, but it's him. You know Ernie Porter, right?
Yes.
91-year-old.
Yes.
World War II veteran. Yeah,
absolutely.
We're all very proud of him also.
He's one of the local heroes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Madam Mayor, Council, staff, and community, Jim Wilkins, President of the Historical Society. I'd like to invite you all down this Sunday, 6 o'clock at the museum. In the gardens, we're going to have our annual Bill Smith Ice Cream Social with all the toppings and trimmings and everything we need to look fit for the summer. So I'd like to invite everyone to come down and enjoy the weather. Thanks.
And Jim, what was the cost for that and the time again?
It's free, all you can eat, and it's 6 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Very good.
Thank you.
I'd like to add, I was there last year, and it's a very nice ice cream social.
Yeah, we've had a full house every year, so.
I believe it, Bob, I believe it.
Thanks.
Free is good, thank you.
Hello, Mayor and Council. My name's Alana Reynolds, and I liked what you did with the restaurant stimulus, Mr. McKinney. Now we need a landlord stimulus. which leads me into what I want to share about with second dwellings. My meter just restarted. Thank you. I own a home at 9903 West Front. I bought it 3 or 4 year permits. Accept the money. And I have a sprinkler system that needs to go in. Even though we're 2 doors from the fire station, we have a larger water meter that we need, school fees and building fees. And if the person that converted this 25 to 30 years ago would have done it properly and legally, the fees would be much lower than they are right now. Because of what's happened in the market, the property is upside down, like many of you know and in this room have the same experience. So what I'd like to, one is to put in a request for myself, and the other is to have a proposal come forward that could bring up other people that are in the same situation. I understand school fees are $2,000 to $3,000. Right now my permit to backwards make it legal. It's already done to code and everything. The fees are over $18,000. You can't refinance a property right now. I'm not going to take it out on a Visa card paying 21%, so I'm hoping that I can get some adjustments in the fees. And I understand the city council can make approval for some lessened fees based on the situation. I understand there's a topic on tonight related to people that started building permits previously that have expired to bring them back into finishing their projects. If that's the case, this is a very good time to bring people, like before you had an amnesty program, bring people up that are in a situation like mine, get them legal, get the property tax up when they're approved this way. Making a few exceptions with these fees that would be very helpful, and pretty much it's the only way I'm going to be able to get this legal. In spending $500,000 on the property, the only way the mortgage can be made is by renting out both units, which was why I purchased it and why I fixed it up. So I'd like the staff to consider my personal situation, and I think that the city, in considering a program that would lower some fees for some people in my situation, I'm not building today. It was built 20 years ago. You can take pictures. You'll see it all. The barn itself was built with the permit in, I think, 76 or 77.
Thank you, Ms. Reynolds.
Thank you. Any questions on mine?
I guess not. Thank you.
Do you have a question for staff then?
Yes. The question would be, will you discuss it? Will you look into it? And will you consider lowering the fees for me and looking at a project across the board for Itasca?
I'm just wondering if staff has any comments on how we could arrange that. I'm not sure how much it would cost, but I think it's a good point that we should address.
I don't know. We'll have to look into it and get some information back to you.
Councilmember Kelly?
Would that come under our stimulus program? Isn't that in the RDA district at Trafficway?
I'm not sure. It's our property, so I'm not sure that it would be in the stimulus program. I think it would be our sign, so maybe we're responsible for it. But I really don't know anything about the... I have to look into what is allowed for the signs and what frontage we have, and first I heard of it.
Well, is there a consensus that we look at this, or...?
Well, yes, I'd like to... First off, there's got to be a place for the sign, right? I mean, that would be the first thing, and...
We'll certainly look at all those and see. We understand the issue, and of course, we want people to go to the skate park, so we will look into the sign issue.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Go ahead.
Thank you. It does seem like it fits under our wayfinding signage program, and we are wanting to direct folks to activities. So I think Councilwoman Bayrou asked if there's consensus, and I think we've all expressed that there's consensus to look into that.
Yeah,
so if you could bring us some information, that would be great.
I'll get that information back.
Thank you. And I do believe we had some questions from Ms. Reynolds about the second unit and the fees. She was wondering if there was a mechanism that could reduce the fees for certain property owners.
There is not a mechanism to reduce fees individually. The fees are applied. We need to meet certain legal tests, and the fees are applied across the board. We do have an item on your agenda tonight about potential zone code amendments. The city council has talked in the past about looking again at affordable units and second units in terms of the cap fees, and that those might ought to be reduced. And that's one of the items we have on the potential zone code amendments this evening's discussion.
Very good. Councilmember Clay?
Yeah. I listen to the water company folks speak, but sometimes they research and go back, you know, and find that the property, had a meter at such a time or was approved for one or so on. With these properties that were built 20, 30 years ago and then they were remodeled without permits and so on, is there any way that, obviously, if they had done it right at that time, there would be a whole different set of values and fees and one thing or another. There's no way.
No.
And I've followed up on this with the water company with other folks in similar situations. I do know they do take a look at when a house was built, and there might be some rights as far as that approval for the second water meter, in a sense. But a comment was made about needing to upgrade a meter for sprinkler systems. And I remember when we had this discussion before, the water company did say that if the only reason you don't need to upgrade the size of your water meter usually for a second unit, but in some cases you might need to increase the size of your water meter for sprinklers. And if that's the only reason you need to do it, I've heard in the past the water company said they would not increase fees for that because they wanted to support our city's efforts in that area.
Councilmember Kelly?
Maybe the city manager could help me on this. We had a little informational meeting with the water company, and if I recall right, didn't they say they had reduced the cost of a water meter for the second unit down to, I believe, was it $6,000?
Yeah, it was a significant reduction, right, that they reduced it. I probably could pull it up quickly, but they require a separate meter for the second unit, Mr. O'Malley. It's not for the fire sprinklers, and it is a reduced cost. I think the city council had asked before for them to look at those reduced or the second unit as a potential lessened impact, and they did that, and they did reduce the cost.
As I recall, I was there that they researched 200 properties or so, and they come up with the fact that second units would pay 65% of the original cost.
Well, I think one of the other things is we asked John Neal maybe one evening to come to the city council and give us a presentation on where the water company is today with all of their fees and requirements. So hopefully we can do that in the future.
Yeah, that would be good because my understanding is in a number of cases I've seen the water bills where you have a second unit. You don't necessarily have a second meter. They just simply treat it as if you had a second meter, and they give you a lower rate for the gallon usage. So it probably would be good to have that clarified for us. And I, again, understand that for sprinklers, that if you need an increased capacity on the size, for example, going from a half inch to 5/8 to 1 inch, that upgrade, if it's only for sprinklers, that they didn't charge. So it would be good to have that.
I think, actually, a portion was for the school fees as well, but probably the vast majority is city-generated fees. Is that not correct? Okay. So probably the best way to handle this is to consider it when we're going through our amendments this evening?
Yes.
Very good. Any other topics that were touched upon that someone would like to speak about on the council? Seeing none, let's go ahead with our public hearing. Our first is the Apple Valley Assessment District, and is there any ex parte communication that we need to share at this time? Seeing none, did I see a hand there, Jerry?
No.
Staff report, please.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. The item you have before you tonight is the Apple Valley Assessment Districts, and there's actually two assessment districts in Apple Valley, both a landscape and lighting district and a benefit assessment district in street and storm drain district. And if you bear with me, Lip, the actual next two items after Apple Valley are De Anza Estates and Las Lomas. All three of the items are a separate public hearing, but they're very similar, so I'm going to just spend a minute here going over the commonality of them. In 2003, council adopted a policy that said all new development must pay for itself. And part of that was requiring developers to put in mechanisms to pay for things such as replacement and repair of the roads and streets over time, replacement and repair of the common areas in a various developments and those types of things. Each developer was given a choice of forming either a homeowners association or forming an assessment district. For the three areas we're discussing tonight, there are a total of 6 assessment districts because each area requires 2 assessments districts under assessment district law, one for landscape and lighting and the other for street and storm drains. What are assessment districts? They basically allow us to charge a specific group of property owners an additional tax to pay for benefits that benefit only their area. They are for services that are only a benefit to the people in that area. The money from the district is kept separate from the city general funds in a separate fund. We account for all the revenues and expenses that come into the fund separately. Any money left over at the end of the year is carried over to the next year only for the benefit of that district. And it may only be spent in the district on allowable items. There is a very small contribution in addition completely from your assessments. Would you like to slowly increase your assessments over time, eating up that reserve, but still keeping it a low amount? And that's what they chose to do. They asked that we levy about 25% of the allowable maximum assessment that will eat into some of their reserves, but still leave them more. And the maximum tax on the district was increased by 3%. The street and storm drain district doesn't enjoy the same reserves that the landscape and lighting district does because it's more of a long-term funding mechanism. So we are going to be assessing 95% of the allowable maximum assessment. And we will be increasing the maximum tax by 3%. That just basically increases the limit if we ever need to go up there, but we will set it based on what we need. And with that, we ask that council adopt 4 different resolutions tonight. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Councilmember Kelly, did you have your hands up?
Yes. What's the administrative cost from the city to manage these?
These are not cheap districts to maintain. Because they are owned by the city, we do have to follow public contract code and public contract law to do all of the work in the districts. And they must have an engineer's assessment report each year and levy the taxes. So on average, they do cost probably about $9,000 a year just in additional fees because the city is doing that. And that's why we have those discussions with the developers at the time on whether they want to do an HOA or an assessment district, and it is their choice. There are some benefits to an assessment district that aren't in an HOA.
I know sometimes in HOAs it's a guideline of what the reserve has to be. Are those the same guidelines in the assessment district? So say 10, 15 years down the road when you have to do some major road repair that the money is there?
That's correct. There are guidelines and there are reserves and capital replacement reserves that we try and put away so that we do have the money in 10 to 15 years to do that.
Thank you.
I have a question. Is there a point of contact for someone that lives within an assessment district with the city?
There is. Jeff English is the person to usually contact. We, in our neighborhood meetings, we usually say if you're unhappy with the landscape and lighting contractor or others, we have them contact the contractor directly first because unfortunately, every hour that staff spends on it, we have to charge to the district because it's not a general.
I'm ready to make a motion if there's no discussion.
No discussion.
Okay. I recommend that we adopt staff's recommendation, which is to adopt draft resolution A, B, C, and D.
Do I have a second? That was seconded by Councilmember O'Malley. A roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie.
Yes.
5-0. Motion passes.
Thank you, Marcia. And our next item is actually very similar to the one that we just went through, and this will be for the De Anza Estates Assessment District. Again, is there any ex parte communication to be declared? Seeing none, staff report, please.
Thank you, Mayor and Council Members. This item is for the De Anza Estates Landscape and Lighting District and Street and Storm Drain District. In the Landscape and Lighting District, this District 2 has some excess reserves. And the district, in the neighborhood meeting that we held, has decided to use some of those, assessing themselves only 20% of the allowable maximum tax levied, to start eating down some of those reserves and get them in line with what we think guidelines should be. So we are recommending that we assess 20% of the allowable maximum assessment, and we are recommending that we increase the maximum tax by 3%. Again, this just allows us some flexibility in the future if something comes up to do that. Street and Storm Drain District, again, like Apple Valley, does not have those excess reserves in the street replacement funds. So we are recommending that we assess 95% of the allowable maximum assessment, and we are also recommending that we increase the maximum tax by 3%.
Thank you, Rochelle. Any questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open it up again to the public. If you'd like to speak on this item, please come forward now. Mr. Broadwater, are you heading that direction? Then I'm going to close the public comment portion and bring it back for a motion. And again, we'll need A, B, C, and D in the motion.
I'll go ahead.
Councilmember Bayrou.
I recommend that we adopt resolutions A, B, C, and D.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Bayrou, second by Councilmember Kelly. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Fonsi?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thanks, Marcia. And then last but not least is the Woodridge Las Lomas Assessment District. Any ex parte communication again? Seeing none, staff report, please.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. For the Woodridge Las Lomas, is still the responsibility of the developer. The neighbors in the district felt, though, that it was important that they continue to assess themselves an amount that they felt comfortable with, so that when the city actually accepts it for maintenance, that there would be enough for the replacement of that, even though the developer will be required to bring it up to code. It also allows them not to forget that that's on there, and that as houses sell, to do that. So they felt, you know, there was a lot of really good discussions about that, but they did feel it was important to assess themselves something. So the recommendation was to assess about, let's see, $102 per year per parcel in that district for the street and storm drain district, and do that, which is about 18% of the allowable maximum assessment. And we do recommend increasing the maximum tax on the district to 3%.
Questions for Rochelle? Councilmember Kelly?
Yeah, I think you made a reference to the developer doing some work down there. I think that project is in some financial distress. Are there bonds in place to handle what the developer may not do or be able to do?
Yes, there are bonds in place, and we are looking at the possibility of trying to collect on those bonds. Certainly the development is not completely built out, and anybody that would eventually take over the project and want to build those out would be required to complete all of the public improvements, including bringing the current roads back up to the city standards.
Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, I'd like to open it up to the public for comment once again. Seeing none, let's close the public comment and bring it back again for a motion. That's your cue, Ellen.
Okay. I recommend that we adopt draft resolutions A, B, C, and D.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Bayrou, second by Councilmember Kelly. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Fonsi?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thanks, Marcia. And let's move on to our Title 8 Building Code Text Amendment, Dormant Building Permit Application Time Extensions, Program Follow-Up Report Phase 2 Option. Staff report, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. This item is a follow-up on our Phase 1 and Phase 2 Permit time extension programs. Just a little bit of background on this. We do have a current backlog of building permit applications. Those occurred based on the recession. We currently have a program referred to as fee standing fees. There's a number of fees that are due against these permits, and we've discovered that the best way to collect those fees is to keep these permits alive until somebody can actually develop the project and then pay off those fees. It also will benefit the construction industry because these plans and permits will stay active and they can quickly build these projects when and if the market turns around to the degree that these projects are feasible again economically. So since 2008, when the recession really started to hit Atascadero, we've developed a backlog of 458 dormant permits. Most of these are for those planned residential projects like Las Lomas that we were just speaking of. We have about $586,000 in back fees that were due, although we have collected a good, well, we've collected about $200,000 of that with a phase one program. And that's what this next bullet says. So the phase one program did collect $211,000 in fees for the 214 permits that were extended under that program. The phase two program then extended the remaining 292 permits. Like I said, those are all scheduled now to expire on June 30th, 2010. So the phase three program is summarized in this table, which is included in your staff report. So this table, the way it works, you kind of read it down is as time goes by. So this first row right here shows where we're at currently. So we have a phase one program, and the rule of the phase one program was everyone in that had to pay their outstanding plan check fees to get the extension, and that extension is to July 30th. There was also a phase two program for those that did not participate in the phase one program, and they did not pay their outstanding plan check fees, so those plan check fees are deferred to the point where they pick them up. But the trade-off was they had to bring their permits up to the current code before they pull their permits. So they will have to do a revision of their plans before they pick those up. So this is the current program right here. So what we're recommending with this code text change tonight is we would create a phase three, and what the phase three would begin on July 1st. So on July 1st, the phase one permits would continue to be extended until the end of this calendar year. So anybody with a phase one permit could still pick it up for the next 6 months without changing their plans. There would be a $150 processing fee that'll help to cover some of the staff costs that are involved in keeping all these permits on file. Would have to be brought up to the new 2011 building code. So they'd have to revise some of their calculations and their energy of standards, that sort of thing, to meet the 2011 standards. They would all have to pay their plan check fees before they pulled their permit, and they would all be subject to the $150 processing fee. And we're recommending that that runs through the end of 2011, and then beginning in 2012, all these permits would be expired, and then we would have to go through a collection process. So that would be a summary of the phase three program. So was there a question?
Councilmember Barrow.
So do they pay the 150 twice, once before July 1st and then again on January 1st, or
no,
just once?
No, just when they pull the permit. So they could pull the permit here, here, or here, and there's just different rules for when they pull it. So the sooner they pull the permit, the less changes they have to make. But if you wait until January 1st, then you have to change your plans, but you'd only pay the $150 fee once.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes, if I could just get a clarification that all plans must be brought up to current code. I think with the time frames, if we gave an 18-month extension last time, that probably some of those permits were in there for 18 months prior to that, going back possibly 2 or 3 years. And have there been any significant changes in the code that would require significant changes in the plans that are being submitted and all of the calculations that would require staff to do a complete plan check for some to activate these?
Well, it depends how old the plans are. Some of these plans do go back to 2003, so some of them are two code cycles old, and after 2011 will be three code cycles older. There have been some significant changes. We have done some reviews, though. We do believe that most of it has to do with the engineering calculations for structure and for energy efficiency. We believe for the most part that they will require additional plan check, but that it won't be that onerous of a process, but they will have to have some new engineering done on these.
And the $150 will be the maximum fee charged by the city to take care of all those changes?
No, though, if there's an additional plan check that's beyond what's already covered by their plan check deposits or what would be their normal plan check fees, we do have a mechanism to charge an additional opportunity before 2012 to revisit the program, just like you're doing tonight. We do believe it's important to have a sunset date. We think 18 months is probably enough to cover the majority of these permits. At some point, these projects that don't get built, we will need to just clear those off. But if we do have any sort of significant economic recovery over the next 18 months, then it's likely, we believe, that many of these will be pulled if they're still viable projects.
And at that time, you know, with your report and all, we could extend again if we wanted to.
We could do it. We will bring this back before it expires, just like we're doing tonight. Right. So obviously, if the council and the economics dictate that we need to extend it yet again, you'll have that opportunity.
Thank you.
I have a question. Have you received many responses to the Phase 2 permit process?
Most of the response we got was on the Phase 1 program because that was an active participation. They had to come in and they had to pay their fees to be into the Phase 1. Phase 2 was kind of a catch-all for a lot of the projects that were in some sort of bankruptcy or foreclosure process. And to a certain degree, a lot of that's still going on. So there are certain people that may end up owning permits that are covered under Phase 2 that still haven't fully acquired the rights to the development project. So we haven't heard that much from many of the parties in Phase 2, but we believe that they're out there and they're actively interested in pursuing these projects. They're just having to resolve all their bankruptcy issues first.
Well, it seems to me that those that participated in the Phase 1 permit process put their money up front. You received $211,000 in fees and acted in good faith, while those in Phase 2 are kind of skating along. But yet when you get to the January 1st and they all have to comply with the same rules, it doesn't seem quite fair that they've given their money and they're not getting any use out of it because they're not able to build. And those that haven't paid get the same program. Do you have any suggestions on ways to make this fair?
Well, I think what we've suggested is that for the next 6 months that the Phase 1 permits do have a separate program where they have the opportunity to pull their permits without changing their plans. And I know that the Dove Creek project is real interested in that. They do believe that they want to take advantage of that. So that is what we've built into the program. But at some point, they all need to be under the same rules. So we're recommending that 2011, we merge them into the same program.
It was planned to expire June 30th this month. And so that's what they actually paid for. We're in this program offering an additional 6 months. So we saw that as fair. It gives them another opportunity, 6 months to wrap it up. If you want to extend it a year, it wouldn't impact the program.
Okay. Any other questions? Councilmember Clay?
No.
Okay, very good. Let's open it up to the public. Is there someone that would like to speak on this item?
Do I need to push anything? Good evening, Ms. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Grant Robbins with Robbins Reed. I am here representing the owners of the Dove Creek development, and we are partnering with them to look at continuing or starting up, I should say, the existing development and building homes here in the near future. And we sent a letter in that I think you might have copies of in front of you that did request 12 months extension for the Phase 1 permit, the dormant permit program applicants. And we greatly appreciate what Warren has put in front of you, but I heard you speaking about it, so I wanted to make mention of the fact that we did request that. While six is good, obviously 12 would be a little bit more helpful in the sense that we, in order to make these projects economically viable, we need to be able to pull those permits kind of over an extended period of time as we build through these neighborhoods. And the additional 6 months would be advantageous in that fact. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them for you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Robbins? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to speak on this? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment portion and bring it back for deliberation. Councilmember O'Malley.
Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I think we've had some discussion. I go ahead and move. We adopt staff's recommendation modifying the 6 months extension to a 12-month extension as discussed.
For phase one.
For phase one.
Yeah. And phase two would remain as proposed by staff?
Yes.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Councilmember O'Malley, second by Councilmember Clay. Roll call vote, please. Discussion. Excuse me, I didn't see you.
Okay. My question is, so basically by making it instead of January 1st.
Ted Marcia.
I would like to clarify. Are we adopting the first reading of an ordinance then?
The recommendation is introduction for first reading.
Right. So I would need the motion to be stated that way. The motion is to introduce for first reading by title only. That needs to be legally in the record.
Go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
Let's see if I can read that. City Council introduced for first reading by title only draft ordinance A to create a phase three dormant building permit application program consistent with staff's recommendation as modified by council. That good enough?
Yes, thank you very much.
Second?
Second.
Yes, okay. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Clay.
Yep.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie.
Yes.
5-0 motion passes.
Thank you. And at this point, we have a time for a break. It's time for management reports when we'll be moving on to a couple of items. Let's take a very short 5-minute break and return to this item C. All right, we're going to move on to management reports, and our first item for discussion is project update, and this is not a public hearing, and this is for the 10-screen movie theater called La Plaza. Staff report, please.
Yes, thank you. Just a quick summary on what this project is. This was a conditional use permit for a 10-screen movie theater building that came before the council in May. This tonight is just a project update report, as the mayor mentioned. This is a receive and file. The council will be taking no formal action tonight on the project. Just to refresh everyone, here is the project site. It's located downtown on El Camino Real, across from the Sunken Gardens. It's also known as the Hoff property. At the council hearing on the CUP, the item was continued and no decision was made. And the council identified four issues that they wanted additional study and information and analysis on. Those four items were economic feasibility, parking impacts, expansion of the master plan boundary, and the downtown height limit zone change. So the consultant, the purpose being that way staff didn't have to make a decision on who the proper consultant would be. And the council asked that the cost of the study not exceed $15,000. So staff has sent a letter to the applicant. It is attached to your staff report that basically lays out what the council direction is on this item. We have heard from Galaxy Theaters that they are willing to participate up to the $7,500. We have not heard formally back from the applicant yet, so we're waiting to hear back. In terms of the parking analysis study, the council did ask for additional analysis of the parking impact this theater plus the Galaxy Theater would have on the overall downtown. We have spoken with Carl Walker Incorporated that did the original downtown parking inventory. They've submitted a proposal to prepare that analysis that would analyze that theater and the overall impact on the downtown. Staff believes this study will be of benefit not only to the project but to the entire downtown, because it will show us really what the impacts of all these new projects would be on the downtown parking, help us strategize a long-term parking solution. So we believe that it's appropriate for this to be funded by the redevelopment agency. terms of the expanded master plan, the council also directed that the project master plan area be expanded. The area shown here kind of in light yellow, that is the current conditional use permit area. That was for the theater with two small retail spaces and the restaurant, but it did not include the plaza area or any of the other retail across from the plaza or any of the retail up the street toward Traffic Way. So it is our understanding from the council that the council is interested in expanding the project areas, at least to include this plaza area, possibly more. So we're in the process of setting up a meeting with the applicant to discuss what the options are for an expanded master plan area. Then the height restriction issue, as we discussed at the previous meeting, there is a provision of the zoning ordinance that restricts the heights of all buildings in this area in blue from Atascadero Creek up to this lot line here to a maximum of 18 feet. The theater project proposed a building substantially higher than that. The Planning Commission did recommend a waiver to that height limitation. At the council meeting, the council did direct staff to consider or look into eliminating this whole height restriction in the downtown zone. That is included as a item for discussion on the zone change. He needs to make a decision either yes or no on this project no later than November 27th, 2010. And we also believe that the feasibility study and the parking analysis will change some of the environmental assumptions on the project, so we will need to recirculate and revise the CEQA document before we re-agendize this project for a hearing. That concludes staff's report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Frace. Just a procedural question. It sounds like you'd like a decision from the council regarding the height restriction removal or leaving it in place tonight, so this is not strictly a receive and file?
That is included on your next agenda
item.
That's
what I know that is true, but you're bringing it up at this point in time, so I would like to have some clarification just to be sure that everyone here understands that.
Our recommendation is you discuss that under the next agenda item.
Very good. And a question for the city attorney, and this is again procedural, that we'll be asking for public comment on this again, and they will be giving us information, but since this is not something we're discussing or making a decision on, should the council limit itself to receiving the information only, or should they be able to question the applicant or others that may address them?
Well, it's a receive and file item, so my advice to you is that if the staff report's complete, and it is, then the appropriate thing at this time would be to take public comment. If you have a question of a speaker, you could ask the question, and then when public comment is finished, you could have discussion amongst yourselves, but since you're not going to be taking action, it's not really deliberation. It's, you know, you just can talk about it if you wish because it's an agenda item, but there wouldn't be any action required at this point.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for staff on the report? Council Member Bayrou.
I have a question on the parking study. The parking study wasn't done that long ago. It was 2006, and we used that for when we approved Colony Square. And so if we update it again, is it going to take into account that a lot of our downtown parking was dedicated towards Colony Square and that we have to find new parking? Or is that going to be, I guess that's part of their analysis. And then my second question is, are they going to look seriously on the viability of the PED tunnel as a access to a source of parking?
The study that was done was more of a inventory and policy recommendation. So what the parking consultant did was look at what was the they already have, plug in those two projects, both operating at the same time frame, and then tell us on a Friday night peak really what happens with downtown parking. You know, how many spaces do you need? How far are people going to have to walk in? Things like the PED tunnel, the ability of people to get through there will clearly be one of the issues about how well the parking works for the project. So they'll have to make some assumptions about how likely people are to walk through there. But that'll give us a pretty accurate picture of, you know, what's going to be the worst case or best case scenario for a busy weekend night, just so the council will have an idea of what to expect, you know, how much, you know, traffic will be milling around and how far people will be walking in, that sort of thing, so we can gauge, you know, what the public perception and impact will be.
And will they be looking into recommendations like diagonal parking, all those? Will those recommendations come from this?
Yeah, they'll be making some basic recommendations. Probably most likely they will tell you what your parking shortage is and then make some recommendations about how you might do that to alleviate it. They won't be doing specific designs, and they probably won't be picking out exact locations. That'll be something staff, Public Works especially, will need to look at and see where we could accommodate that parking deficiency. If there is a parking deficiency, that's what we'll find out.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. If we go ahead with this additional parking study, would there be any scoping opportunities where we'd have some input on that, or should we be making suggestions or questions now?
I think if there's something that you want staff to be looking at when we administer the study, that would be good to let us know now.
Well, a question that had come up before is there was concern about not only the bottleneck of the pedestrian tunnel, but you know, I'm concerned with evening, weekend activities by the churches and the high school. I'm not sure that parking is available at peak need time. So, and I haven't seen any of those organizations come forward offering up that private parking yet. So I assume that would be researched, or we'd have some information about if that's available or not and what impact would be with the existing activities.
Okay.
And I would like to see Main Street involved in the parking study in one way or another. I know that they're looking at parking downtown in particular and trying to find places that are under.
The city should work with private parking lot owners to better utilize existing supplies to the benefit of the city, developers, and the private lot owners. There's plans put in place in this parking study that began in 2006 to start for the city to go out and look for these parking spaces. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think this plan has been followed hardly at all. And it costs $50,000. And we want to go out and spend another, what is it, $8,500 for another parking study, plus reimburse the people to come from Arizona for their airplane trips, hotels, and what have you, to do a parking study for a development that we don't even know if we have. I think we're kind of getting the cart ahead of the horse here. I think we have ample information here regarding our parking problems or no parking problems, whichever way you want to look at it. For years and years and years, I've heard the Planning Commission, the City Council say, we want a parking problem. We want a traffic problem. Well, we're there. And I think it's a waste of our city money again that we do have this parking study here, and it addresses all of the issues that the city needs to do to take care of the parking problem. So I would be against spending the money, probably up closer to $10,000, for another parking study that we already have. So.
Councilmember Clay?
The cart ahead of the horse, that's my saying, something, Bob. Would you know that? Okay.
Okay.
But
line
right, okay. You're not asking us to approve the $8,700 tonight or anything like that.
No, we're not. We're just advising you that that's what staff's moving forward with.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I would like to have a copy of the parking study. I wasn't on the council in 2006. It might be helpful if we could review that before we consider the expenditure. And with that said, let's open it to the public for any comment on the theater projects or other items that we've discussed tonight. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close this portion and recommend that we have a motion to receive and file.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Kelly, second by Councilmember O'Malley. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie.
Yes.
5-0 motion.
Any discussion or questions before we open it to the public? Councilmember Bayrou.
As some of you know, I have a high school student, and my daughter had heard about this this initiative to put a resolution, and her friends circulated a petition, and she asked me to bring it to the meeting tonight. And it is finals week for them, and I know a lot of them want to keep their good grade point averages, so they didn't want to hang out here all night when they could be studying, which is probably a good thing. So I'm just going to read what they said. The top of it, by the way, there's 111 signatures here, and I know they just collected these over the last few days. Students of Atascadero High School are in support of adopting a resolution protecting whales and opposing commercial whaling. And then I asked her, because she wasn't coming, to write something up for me about what response she got from some of the kids. And she wasn't the only one circulating these petitions, but this is the ones that she got. This is what she wrote. The students and future voters of Atascadero High School were shocked when we heard about lifting the ban on whaling. We have signatures to show that whales are an important part of our lives as well as the ecosystem of the world. Please join our fight to protect the largest mammal on the planet, the whale. Short and sweet. So there's 111 signatures here. I'm just going to pass them along here so you guys can take a look at it. Thank you.
Okay, let's give this to Marcia when we get done for the record. Any other discussion before I open it to the public? Very good. I'd like to open it up for anybody who'd like to speak on this topic.
Good evening. My name is Marty Brown. I'm here to ask you to adopt the resolution supporting the protection of whales by opposing the lifting of the moratorium as proposed by the International Whaling Commission. We must join thousands of other governmental bodies and millions of people the world over who are against having the moratorium on killing whales lifted. It should be strengthened and enforced. Any resumption of commercial whaling should be opposed. If the moratorium is dismantled, it would be one of the most damaging setbacks ever for wildlife conservation. As President Obama stated in June 2008, as president, I will ensure that the U.S. provides leadership, including strengthening the international moratorium on serious health effects. So you see, we are not only killing whales by harpoon grenades, but by pollution of our oceans. With nearly 7 billion humans living on our small planet today, we certainly have whales outnumbered. What is happening in the Gulf of Mexico right now is an unprecedented ecological disaster. I have volunteered with a nonprofit wildlife rescue and rehabilitation center here locally for a number of years. We deal with all kinds of wild creatures, you name it, from pelicans to possums and everything in between, and the orphaned young they leave behind. As we have heard, there is no humane way of killing whales. They suffer greatly before dying. In dealing with vulnerable wildlife, I have come to know that they are much the same as we humans are, able to feel pain, fear, and shock. I have heard people who have worked around whales to extricate them from discarded lines and trash thrown overboard say that looking eye to eye with a whale is a life-changing experience. We can't let this happen, please. If our efforts can save even one whale, and the tens of thousands of letters and resolutions from others can each save a whale, then maybe we will be worthy to look into the eyes of whales. Please adopt this resolution. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. My name is David Broadwater, and I want to thank you for placing this on your agenda. I've spoken to you twice before on this and sent you a pretty voluminous packet of information with lots of detail and information and data on the subject. So my plea tonight is going to be less about the evidence and more about experience. When I see our cetacean cousins breaching the surface of the ocean and slapping it with their flutes, as I stand on the edge of our continent just over the hills from here, I'm glad to be alive, and I'm glad to be a human being. And I know that I'm not alone in the world. If they're killed off, there'll be a hole in the world. If they're killed off, there's going to be a hole in me. We must not allow President Obama's delegation to the International Whaling Commission to capitulate to rogue nations whose blatant exploitation of the IWC moratorium loopholes perpetuates an escalating and uncovered this month. On behalf of these intelligent and socially and linguistically sophisticated beings who are our contemporaries and neighbors, I urge you to adopt this resolution. In closing, I ask you four questions. Is their motherly love any less intense than ours? Is their language, which we call songs, any less expressive than ours? Are their screams any less piercing than ours? Are their tears any less salty? Please draw on the wisdom that manifests when intellect and heart are both engaged, and let that guide your decision tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broadwater.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Thomas McGee, Tascadero resident since 1970. My recent trip to Alaska, I had the privilege of watching up close whales. However, when I came back to California and I was driving down 101, I didn't think that I would probably see a sign in a Tascadero saying that we support or are opposed to this International Whaling Commission. I'd like to direct the City Council back to the focus of keeping the citizens of Atascadero safe, safe from crime, safe from fire. I don't believe that a resolution is the answer. I believe that individuals need to join the numerous environmental groups, whale protection groups throughout the county, throughout the state, throughout the nation, and throughout the world. Perhaps they should look up some of the latest UN resolutions. The city is faced with closing storefronts, with roads that have little short grass growing up in the middle of it. We're taking money from one fund to pay another fund. I think this is a consumption of both time and energy that is not needed, will not help the whales. Unless we have a whale in the Tascadero Lake, the focus of the City Council should be on the city, not some international method of making a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGee.
Mayor and Councilman, my name is Richard Smith. I live here in Atascadero. I have a doctorate in animal learning and behavior and a special interest in the neurophysiology, the brain functions of cetaceans. And I just want to make a couple of comments of what that background has given me. I got into the field because I was studying neurophysiology and was astounded at the complexity and size and so forth of the brains of whales. So were a lot of other people, because of humans, we sort of like to think we got the best brains around. It turns out that no one's yet found any criteria in which there isn't a cetacean, a whale, that has a more complex brain. So you can look at the brain-body weight ratios. Some of the dolphins have larger brains to body weight ratios than humans. The amount of complexity, contortions, and so forth of the brain. No, we don't necessarily win there. The relative blood flow to our brains and so forth. And people tried hard to beat the whales in this category. It so astounded me that I really wanted to study whales. And to the best of my knowledge, no one's ever yet, no humans have proven that we beat whales in the brains department. So the notion from a scientific area, sort of supporting David, I guess, that these are incredible sentient beings that live in a completely different world than ours, but are unbelievably sophisticated. I just want to try and give you a sense of that feeling. And for our species to support their various species seems to me one clue that maybe our brains aren't quite so small after all in comparison to this. So I certainly am in support of the resolution. I also want to mention that living in the proximity to one of the few living estuaries in California and having Atascadero support the resolution is important because these estuaries may very well be responsible for 30% of marine life, and the cetaceans are at the top of that chain. So I think it's just grand that we get together the various cities in this area and support the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Hi there. My name is Mandy Davis, and I've been in the process of coordinating the Save the Whales project here in San Luis Obispo. On May 23rd, we had an incredible rally in support of the whales. We had over 400 people at our rally, and this was a statewide rally, and we had more people from this county than any other county. This is a really important issue. I could stand up here and speak the language of science till I'm blue in the face. Could talk about the science of whaling, how horrendous it is, how absolutely inappropriate it is from an ecological standpoint for hours. I could stand up here and speak to you of economics. How, if you were to look at this from just a pure economic standpoint, how it doesn't really seem to make sense that these whaling nations are continuing to break an international moratorium, thumb their noses at the international community, and whale. I could speak to you of the politics of power, of nations that want to continue to do with what they will, our oceans, what belongs to all of us, to continue to rape, pillage, and plunder as they will. And I assure you that the whaling issue is probably more about that than anything else. But I'm not going to talk about that. I want to talk about the language of the earth. I want to talk about us listening to what the earth is saying to us. I want to talk about how we have the responsibility to listen to the voices of the voiceless and to in turn act upon that and to learn to speak it ourselves. I have, as an old fart, as I call myself, some really indelible experiences, some experiences that have been seared upon my brain. One of those experiences is not a particularly pleasant one. I've been to Antarctica twice to observe what the Japanese have been doing in the Antarctic whale sanctuary and have been mind-boggled. But that experience of hearing the screams, of watching the absolute unbelievable cruelty that these animals that have struggled so hard to survive against all odds and against our hundreds of years of abuse, and they are still being tortured at our hands by nations that have been illegally continuing to whale. We are not a nation to support these kinds of actions. We are not a nation that will give in to terrorism and poaching of this kind. This is totally within your purview. I do not agree with the man that just spoke. This is our responsibility to say what we must and what we can to the administration. And this entire county is very reliant on our marine economy. So if you want to look at from the economic standpoint, yes, it's very important for Atascadero to take this on, because a lot of the folks who come through are coming here for our coastal influences.
Ms. Davis, I'm sorry, but your time is up.
So I just encourage you to adopt the resolution and to speak the language of the earth. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this item? Are there any questions of the council members for those who spoke? Well, I will raise the question then, and I'm not sure if this would be Mr. Broadwater or this would be Ms. Davis, but as a municipality, we aren't really involved in whaling, and although we may individually be very opposed to whaling, I am curious to know what impact a city could have doing a resolution against whaling. That we are involved with whale watching, perhaps, and tourism comes into it, but we have no jurisdiction over whaling at all. And so it seems a bit out of our jurisdiction to be making these kind of resolutions. So I'd like to get your input on that, please.
San Luis Obispo initially made the same comment. And once again, you know, a resolution of this kind, the California Coastal Commission, the Board of Supervisors in this county, San Luis Obispo, and Morro Bay all adopted a similar resolution. How this really makes a difference is, number one, we are coastally dependent, but as a group of cities, as a county itself, within the process of us taking all of this information to the administration, along with the petitions, along with, I will be going to, here is really how it's going to help. I'll give you a very specific example. I'll be going to represent the County of San Luis Obispo at the Ocean Protection Council meeting next Wednesday on the 16th. It is really important for them to understand that this is a very important issue to all Californians. Whether or not it's specifically within the confines of your purview from a legal standpoint is a moot point. This is a resolution of support for a very, very important animal in a very important ecosystem. And believe it or not, even if you live over the mountains from that ocean, it has a tremendous amount of impact on you, your economy, and your lives. So those are the reasons why this resolution should be passed, so I can take it to the Ocean Protection Council and let them know that this county is in absolute support of the current moratorium and strengthening it.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Broadwater.
Yes, David Broadwater again. Just a couple of quick points. You already have received the resolutions that have been unanimously passed by the cities of Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo, the County Board of Supervisors, and all of them have similar language to what this resolution before you tonight has, mentioning that millions of people come to California for the purpose of whale watching along the coast every winter and spring, and that it's a valuable economic activity to coastal communities throughout California. You would be acting in our interests that we have when it comes to tourism and supporting that kind of economic activity that's here on the coast and a spillover effects that we could have from that. I briefly mentioned that to you last time you met. So it is definitely within our purview and our interest. And secondly, when I and other people will write to President Obama, the International Whaling Commission, and his delegation about this, if you pass this, we will be able to say that our own local representatives right here in this city supported this resolution and opposed this proposal. So it will add weight to individuals' advocacy on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broadwater. I'm going to close the public comment portion and bring it back for deliberation. Councilmember Bayrou.
Well, I agree with all the speakers, and I even agree with Mr. McGee that this doesn't really seem like something we should be working on, but the only thing it's costing us is the time to discuss. The resolution has been written. There really isn't a lot of overhead on this resolution. And, I can support it for two reasons. One, I'm an environmentalist, and I think these kind of issues are very important to the longevity of our planet. And the second is that as a council, we have been trying to promote ourselves as a tourist destination. And I know each one of us has worked on a county level to promote tourism and tourism activities as a whole, knowing that what's good for the county is good for us. And I know everyone's gone to the beach at least once in the last month, I hope. And it is pretty exciting when you look out there and you see something spouting, and I've never taken a whaling trip, but from what I understand, it's pretty amazing. So I'm going to suggest that we do support this resolution, so we can stand with our other county representatives for the interest of our economy.
Thank you, Councilmember O'Malley.
Well, I'm going to support this for five reasons. I wasn't going to mention my fifth, but I do have to admit I always think of the Star Trek movie where the whales were called upon to communicate. You know, it was an interesting story. But I think my four principal reasons are I think there is an unfair national interest with other nations poaching in some areas that I think are detrimental to our national interests. I do think we want to support tourism as an industry in our area, and I do find that this is an important attribute. And I do believe that this is something we can support as a council, though it wouldn't be something I would put ahead of other items. I do feel in our community we have a diverse community with a lot of different viewpoints, and everyone ought to get something, and our council needs to support all constituents, and this is something that's maybe more important to some of our constituents than others, but we find a way to, you know, even give subs a trial in the lake. We can maybe help protect whales somewhere. And I think finally and really important to me personally, as I do feel, as I've said many times, we have a responsibility to be stewards of our environment from my Christian worldview. And I do think this is helping in preserving a balance in nature. And I accept that responsibility and do what little bit we can with the resolution.
Thank you. Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, I agree with both Ellen and Tom, but I'd like to just reflect on a little story. I was over at the Hamlet one Sunday afternoon, and there was a family from Kansas there, and they were looking out in the ocean trying to see a whale. And it was like a freeway of whales out there. I mean, it was during the migration period, and the spots were coming up, and they just couldn't spot them. And I always remember that I spotted one for this little girl, and she about jumped out of her chair. And it was really exciting to see that happen to somebody who really never sees the ocean. And I think that is part of the tourism that, you know, I don't know if those people were staying in Atascadero or wherever, but, you know, even if they're staying someplace else, it helps the whole area. And then I think there has been some abuse to the whales, and they do need a little protection. So I'll be supporting the resolution also.
Thank you. Councilmember Clay?
Well, here we go again. there are many, many, many causes worldwide out there. And I don't think it's our position to be trying to support every cause. I don't think the United States is involved in whaling. I don't know whether this resolution or Obama or anyone else can stop the Japanese or the Norwegians or whoever else is doing this. But, I respect my fellow council members. If they want to support this resolution, fine. But I didn't vote to bring it up here, and I'm going to have to vote against it.
Thank you. I have mixed feelings on this because I have the feel that we're entering a slippery slope when the city council makes resolutions or passes ordinances or other things over which we have no jurisdiction. It puts me in mind of the city of Berkeley that made a resolution against the Gulf War, when obviously a city has no jurisdiction over a war. I personally find whaling repugnant. I have a great deal of respect for wildlife, and my fellow council members, I'm sure, feel the same way. This is a tough one for me, and I would like to just put it out there for information. If something else comes back like this, unless it affects the city personally, I would probably be inclined to vote no and not listen to it, because I believe we're seeing the county enter into discussions on various propositions and other things over which the county probably should keep their nose out of it and let the voters decide. But my first reaction is, yes, I would like to see the whaling stopped, that I'd like to go whale watching myself. I think it is a tourist activity that does involve those who live and visit Atascadero. So I, too, can support this one individual action. If the others come, I will probably be more reluctant to do so. With that said, is there a motion?
I'll be happy to make the motion. The council adopt the draft resolution supporting the protection of whales and opposing the resumption of commercial whaling and the 10-year quotas for gray whales as proposed by the International Whaling Commission.
It's been a motion on the floor by Councilmember Bayrou, second by Councilmember O'Malley. A roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
No, and I certainly don't support whaling, and I support animals as much as anybody else out here. Thank you.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie.
Yes.
4-1, motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on, our next topic is general municipal election for November 2nd, 2010. Staff report, please.
Oh, thank you. You're very efficient, Warren, over there. Okay. Mayor Fonzie and Council, this item is about the election that will be coming up in November 2010. And the recommendation that's listed in the report, I know this is small on the slide, but it's the four resolutions, to call for the election, to consolidate with the county, and then there's two resolutions involving the ballot measure, which we'll talk about here. The community impact of voting on these recommendations is to allow the public to choose their representatives in local government by the two council member seats that are up, and also to decide if the city should have an elected mayor. The positions that are open, Councilmember Bayrou and O'Malley's positions are both up for re-election, as is my position in city clerk and the city treasurer, Joe Modica. These are all four-year terms. And going to the mayor selection, which is about the ballot measure that the council asked me to place on this election, as a brief history, we've been through this before. I just wanted to go through it because it's actually been 14 months since we last talked about this. The California Government Code requires that the mayor and mayor pro tem be selected by the council as a majority, and then a city can adopt a resolution if they want to do something different than that, but that's what the state code requires. So the city, from 1979 when we incorporated till 2003, did follow the California state code, and the majority of the council each year chose the mayor and mayor pro tem. Then in 2003, the council adopted a resolution that provided a rotation method so that they could basically take turns being mayor and mayor pro tem. And that worked, I guess, relatively smoothly, and except in 2006, they decided to amend that slightly to add so that you couldn't become mayor on the very first year that you were elected council. And then in 2009, which was about a year and a few months ago, this current council, repealed that resolution. It went back to the California requirement of having just the majority of the council choose the mayor, and also directed that I bring for this election to have the elected mayor ballot measure on the ballot for the public to decide. Again, a review for current elected mayors in California. The state has 480 cities, and 149 of them, or 31%, have elected mayors. So we are in the majority still, but you do hear some people have said, well, the only ones that don't have an elected mayor, and that we are the only one in the county, as that list. There were seven cities, and six of them do have elected mayor. Again, it's a California code that requires, if you want to change and make the mayor seat elected, you have to actually ask the voters, is this something the council can do on their own? So the government code actually lists that you have to list it on the ballot as a question of whether they want to have the position of mayor be elected, and if so, do they want it to be 2 or 4 years in length? And this is what the ballot will look like. It's actually three ballot measures. That was a new thing to me when I was talking to the county clerk's office. Because they're three separate questions, they consider them three ballot measures. So I don't know what they'll be called, you know, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, whatever their numbers will be, but they'll be three separate questions. And the cost for adding this ballot, I'm going to call it a ballot measure, but it really is three technically, is approximately $2,000 to add this to the election, which I think I had mentioned before. The next item here I was going to talk about is, which is what the third and fourth resolutions that I have on your staff report are talking about, is that the city council, if you adopt resolution C, will ask the city attorney to create an impartial analysis of the issue. And that basically means that he will write a factual, neutral position about what this ballot measure will create if it's approved. It can be no more than 500 words, and if you do adopt that tonight, he has 14 days to create that, and then once he turns that in to me, then it's open for the public to review and anyone, including yourselves, to look at for about 10 days. And then also the resolutions also allow if you adopt them, allow for written arguments for and against the measure. So council members or the public could submit to me arguments for and against. And again, the deadline I've set is July 13th. That's if you adopt these resolutions tonight. And then after those are all turned in, then the public can look at all of those, and then anyone can also file a rebuttal argument for against on the for or against arguments. What this all means is if that happens, it doesn't have to. No one has to turn in an argument for or against, but if anyone decides to, and we have those, then those go into the voter pamphlet that you get close to election time, and those are those things that you'll read, for and against propositions or whatever. Those would be in there. And I would be posting a notice about this deadline, everything in the paper and on the front door of City Hall, so everyone would have a notice of that. If this ballot measure is successful and a majority of the public votes for it, then at the next election in 2012, November, would be the office of mayor would be on that ballot. And what that means is, so the next, in 2012, there's three council members up for re-election, and that's Councilmember Clay, Fonzie, and Kelly. Those three positions will be in 2012. If this ballot measure is successful, then one of those positions will no longer be a council member seat, it'll be a mayor seat. At the last time we talked about this, the council asked me to look into using of city funds for campaign purposes of a ballot measure. And we briefly talked about it. I did look into it a little more, and it's the California Supreme Court is pretty clear that they don't want public agencies spending money to promote a ballot measure. And so you can use the public resources to analytically evaluate it or give facts. You can, in fact, I have a list here of a couple of things. They just don't want you to campaign on the ballot measure. So here are some permissible activities. Taking a position at an open and public meeting is allowable. Responding to inquiries about the ballot by giving facts, not promoting it. And sharing information like in a newsletter or something, emphasizing the facts on our website, for example. Those would be all allowable uses. Not allowable activities would be bumper stickers or brochures or billboards, television or radio commercials promoting the ballot measure, things like that. Okay, the next topic we've talked about briefly before, although there's additional information here that I learned in doing the research for this, is a vacancy that can be caused by council members running for the mayor position. And I've had a few questions about this too, so I just want to clarify it, that if a council member if the ballot measure is successful and we now have an elected mayor and a council member runs for that seat and that council member is midterm, then, you know, 2 years into their council seat, and they are successful and they become the elected mayor, they're going to leave a vacancy behind, a two-year term. So that vacancy is going to need to be filled by the council, and you have the choice of either appointing somebody within 30 days or calling for a special election. So if you call for the special election, because there's only four people left now, and if you have a vacancy, there's a mayor and three council members, so you'll have four people deciding how to fill that vacancy. If you either can't decide, it's 2-2 or whatever, or I have heard from other cities that their councils prefer that the public choose the vacancy, then it would go to a special election. And this was a concern I had that I just wanted to let you know about. This is not a discouragement at all, but I'm just wanting to make sure that you are aware that because of this situation happening in November, the election happens in November, you don't get sworn in until December. That's when the vacancy would begin. And then you have 30 days into January to decide how that's going to be filled. If you decide a special election and you call it in January, the next time that you can have a special election is June, and I think that's the next slide here. Yeah, these are the established election dates that the California Election Code lists. So the one I underlined, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in June, is the first one that would fit because it has to be at least 114 days after you call for the election. I know these are all very technical issues and it's confusing, but it would be June before the special election could take place. The information that I learned more recently is also that the county clerk informed me that because these are happening on an even year, when you have the election, if a special election were to take place, it would always be on an odd year. We don't have very many elections in odd years. Very occasionally a special election of maybe just one body like the school district or something like that. So if that were the case, we'd be either on our own, or if there was anyone else, we would be consolidated with another agency, but it would be expensive. And it could be anywhere between, I think my next slide shows, yeah, it could be if we're consolidating with another party and the county's going to do it for us, it's still probably between $35,000 and $85,000. If it's a standalone and there isn't other election taking place, the county won't run it for us, and that would mean we'd have to hire consultants and precinct workers and ballot counters and et cetera, et cetera. So that's the $100,000 and up range. So my point is you just need to be aware that this could take place. Now, another question was asked, too, that if a council member is at the end of their term, they've finished their 4 years, and they can either run for council or they can run for mayor if you have this elected mayor. And so if they decide, okay, I'm not going to run for council, I'm going to take a shot at the mayor, and they lose, then they are out. But if they run for council, I mean, they'd be out no matter what if they lose, obviously. But I guess a situation was brought up about Paso Robles where we actually had two council members running for mayor there one time, and this could happen anywhere. One of them was at the end of their term. The other one was midterm. They're both running for mayor. The one in the middle of his term was successful and became mayor. So that created a vacancy. The other one was at his end of his term. So when he lost the mayor election, he was out. Now, the four remaining council members had to either appoint or call for a special election. They could have appointed the one that was out if they wanted to, but they didn't. They chose someone else. So that is always a possibility, too. Okay, so let's see if I've covered all that. I'll just keep going on here unless you ask me a question.
Well, let me ask a question.
Okay.
You know, I think this came up before, and there's probably a reason it doesn't work, but is there any reason you couldn't do the mayor election in a primary period like this year when you have a primary and then that decision would be made and then you'd have the opportunity to make the council decision in the November election?
Well, again, you would have, if you're having that, then you'd be having two elections in the year, so it would cost
still
you more.
Still would cost.
I don't know what the amount would be. Okay. In this. Yeah, it's true. No free lunches. The primary is, well, now, in particular this year, I don't know how many agencies are involved, and I would have to ask how much it would have cost, let's say, just this year to have had the mayor election, and then we'd still have, though, the election, which is about $18,000 in November also. So you'd have to add the two together. You'd still be...
You've costed out every conceivable opportunity. Of course, the cheapest alternative is if we could just agree as a council.
Well, and bringing that up, some cities, I talked to several different city clerks, and they said that some of the cities have adopted a policy or something to try and assure that they're not going to have a special election because they don't want that extra cost.
Right.
So they either, you know, adopt a policy or an ordinance, whatever, and said that, you know, we're going to really try to appoint somebody,
right,
and if we can't agree, then we're going to agree to pick the next highest vote getter in that election last month, you know,
yeah,
a month ago. And that works until a majority of the council doesn't like that idea, and then they repeal the policy, just like this resolution was repealed a few years ago. You know, so it's as good as it can last as long. I mean, it'll be as good as long as it lasts. There's no guarantees that will be forever.
Nothing.
Sorry. I'd like to have a definitive answer, but I don't think there is one.
Any other questions? Councilmember Clay?
Tom did make a good point. So if we... If the citizens out there move to have an elected mayor in November, then it's in 212 when... we actually elect our mayor.
Yes.
And now, his question was, could the mayor election be on the primary? There will be a primary in 212, I'm sure.
I'm not sure what's happening in 212,
yeah,
but or how many agencies are going to be on there,
right,
having an election.
It would
so
be
there
some.
Won't be a governor, for example, unless he resigns, and,
yeah,
or he or she resigns in 2 years, and there has to be a primary. But so there might just be one or two other agencies. And yes, you could do that.
Yeah.
It would have to be arranged that way, but it would be, you'd have to pay for that election.
I understand.
Separate.
You might check that out, though, Marcia, to see what that would cost. You know.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Again, it would probably be between the $35,000 and $85,000 range that the county's given
sure
me for a separate election with just a few
Right. But as a matter of a comment, why I know Roy Grandy just had a vacancy, and they filled it, the council filled it. Mm-hmm. And I know when Wendy Scalise was filled a vacancy, the council did that, you know.
Actually, we've had, I did my research on that, sure, too. Since the city's been incorporated, we've had four vacancies.
Right.
Due to resignations, Wendy was not well, and then we had a few others that were moving or whatever. So there was four different reasons, but they all resigned at different times. Two of them were appointed, people were appointed to replace them, sure, and two of them had to go to special election.
I know George Hyland, that was a special election.
Because right. And actually, Wendy was appointed to replace someone, but when Wendy resigned, we had a special election.
I see. Okay.
And actually, when she came to me and said, you know, she was going to have to resign because of her health, she actually worked it with me to resign in May so that it could be a special election to be in November with our regular election. So right, it didn't cost us very much to do that.
That was nice of her.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does. My point is that two times we have had to have a special election, and two times there's been able to be an appointment. Wendy was one of the appointments, but then when she resigned, there was an election to replace her. Mm-hmm. Right.
Councilmember Kelly?
Just a couple questions. If you had the election during the primary and a non-council member won, you would have to remove somebody from the city council to seat him. Is that correct?
That would be right.
And then
so that's
the
problem.
If the citizens... that's what we're talking about. And then if the citizens, this goes ahead and it's a two-year mayor, a term of 2 years, the city could be subject to a $100,000 election every 2 years. Is that correct?
That could happen, yes.
And then in the year 2012, you have three people that are up for re-election. And if all three of those wanted to run for mayor and one of the remaining city council members wanted to run for the mayor also, and they won, you could basically wipe your city council out of experienced people because they wouldn't have the opportunity to sit on the city council if they were only eligible to run for the mayor.
If you mean if they had term limits? I guess I didn't understand your question.
Because
if three people are at the end of their term, then they're up for re-election, so other people will be running for their spots anyway.
The other thing I see is kind of an unfair playing field that if the person is midterm, that they have no liability, that they can just throw their name out there and go for it, whereas a person who's actually sitting on the city council and they still want to remain on the city council and run for mayor, they have they're jeopardizing their seat, and I mm-hmm. don't think that's fair. Of course, there's a lot of things in life that aren't fair.
Yeah.
So I personally think over the 30 years we've been operating fairly smooth, and this is fairly complicated to me. I think unfair at some point and can open the city up to some major expenses.
But Bob, that wasn't the position you took during the election, okay? All right.
Okay.
No.
Let's not go there. I have a question for you, Marcia. It's been 14 months, as you said, and as I recall, we couldn't as a council state that the mayor's position would be 4 years. We had to give the voters the option
right,
of two, so that can't be taken off the table.
Right. It has to be. They have to be asked if they want 2 or 4 years, yes.
Okay. Any other questions for Marcia? Was that the end of your presentation?
It wasn't.
Go ahead, then.
I'm sorry. So my next slide here is just showing that for the regular election that we're talking about in November, for the two council members and the clerk and treasurer, the estimate is $18,000, and that's pretty typical. That's nothing unusual. And then the added ballot measure is the $2,000. So then the next thing, this is not in your report, and it was about campaign signs. I did send you a memo last week, and I just wanted to briefly go over this for the public's benefit and for yours, and if anyone has any questions. Our current municipal code has this section in it that was adopted in 2002 stating that temporary non-commercial signs may be displayed in permission with the permission of the property owners up to 60 days before and 10 days after any election. And that's basically the campaign sign section there. There's other parts of the sign ordinance that pertain to them also in regards to size and things like that. But this is the one that talks about time limit. And I'm bringing that up because And well, first of all, before I even say that, in June, I wanted to say, of 2000, after we had a special election, not a city special election, but a countywide for board of supervisors, et cetera, in March of 2007. And it was a board of supervisor campaign that we had problems with election signs, with people not liking where they were and taking them down and different things. And so the council, we had lots of letters to the editor and people coming to public comment. And so the council directed me, actually they originally appointed an ad hoc committee of two council members and I believe the city manager and myself and city attorney to talk about what we should do. And the end result was the council came back and said that they wanted me to prepare a memo to all the employees so that they'd be prepared to deal with any complaints or problems that came up in the next election and do a press release so the public was aware of how we were really going to enforce this about time limits for signs and where they would be located, et cetera. And I was directed by the council at the time to make sure to talk to the candidates that were running that year to really be stern about the fact they have to follow the rules. And we created a code of campaign conduct, a sheet that listed the code requirements, and we asked voluntarily if each candidate would sign it. And I've been doing that at every election ever since then. Recently, though, legal decisions, the California Supreme Court has decided, there have been some candidates in previous elections who have sued the city saying that the First Amendment allows freedom of speech and that they should be allowed to put up their signs whenever they want and leave them up for as long as they want, et cetera. And those cases, those candidates have won that the Supreme Court has, California Supreme Court has agreed that campaign signs are an inexpensive and effective way for candidates, especially in non-incumbents, people that don't have a name recognition, they can get the message out and establish that name recognition. And so they feel that the freedom of speech of these people is more important than the city's feeling of the view shed and if the signs are causing, it not to look as pretty in the town. So basically those decisions have said that we can't control how long those signs are up or how early or late they put them up. So as a result of that, for this election, I am planning on notifying all the employees about this new information and also the candidates that will be coming in to run for the offices and to let them know that they can put up signs anytime they wish, basically. However, I'm also going to remind them that we do still have that code section in our municipal code saying that they can't put them up until 60 days before the election because the community is very aware of that rule. And we get quite a few calls when signs go up early. So I want, I'm going to try and get it in the paper and everything, so hopefully I'll minimize the confusion, but I want the candidates to be cautious about, doing something, putting them up too early. It'll just cause them problems with the community. But I think if we do enough information out there to everyone that it'll probably go pretty smooth, I'm hoping anyway. And then after the election, like next year, I'll probably recommend to the council that we file an amendment on the municipal code to change that. Now, I did check with the League of California Cities. Most cities, in fact, a lot of cities have like a 45-day, some 60 like us. Many of them have a 90-day, and most of them have not changed that. They are still enforcing it even and have had little to no problems. But because that litigation has taken place, I talked with the city attorney, we agreed that there's no reason to push that issue. We know that it really isn't something we should be doing if the California Supreme Court is agreeing that that's a problem. So I think that's a good approach, a cautious, conservative approach, and then next year I'll come back to you with some recommendations to change that code section. So back to, this is a very small print again of the four resolutions that I'm recommending. The first one calling for the election, the second one asking the county to consolidate so that they'll run the election for us. The third resolution calling for the city attorney to write the impartial analysis and the arguments, and the fourth resolution for the approval of having rebuttal arguments. That concludes my report, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them if I can.
Thank you for a good report. Any questions?
So, yes. So when you say that the city attorney will write the arguments about the mayor situation...
I'm sorry, yes. The impartial analysis is an impartial, factual writing about the ballot measure, yes. So it will explain what, if it's successful, what that ballot measure will create.
Okay.
And so it informs, and it'll be in the voter pamphlet that everyone gets so they'll be able to read it so they'll understand what that means.
Other questions? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public for any comments. No one would like to speak on this topic? Seeing none, let's close it and bring it back for discussion.
Okay. Well, could I lead it off, Roberta?
Yes, you may.
All right. You know, I think I have a lot of faith in the citizens of Atascadero, and I think they have the right to elect their mayor. In the past, the near past, we've had some disasters, in my opinion, and I'd like to see the public have the opportunity to elect the mayor, and I think they'll elect a person that that's a community leader that they feel confident in, and I have you know, all of the respect in the world for our citizens, and I think they'll do a good job. And hopefully, I didn't think this would be an issue at this time, to be truthful with you, because when we discussed it early on, why we at least we were pretty close to 4-1 in favor of it. But I'm totally in favor of the elected mayor, and you know, I would prefer to see them go with a 4-year. But if they don't, why we'll accept what the public out there decides, and at least give them an opportunity and give them all the options. And if they turn it down, why they turn it down, and we'll go along like we have been doing. But again, I'd like to see a righteous community leader in there, someone that our citizens have total respect for, and I think I've got all the confidence in the world that they'll do a good job of electing a mayor.
Thank you. Other comments? Councilmember Bayrou?
I believe the vote was 3-2 last time, and I was one of the two that opposed. And those reasons still stand for me. I actually believed in the rotational system, but you know, council majority has its benefits as well, because it requires that the majority on your council support your mayor. And the current way we do it, you always make sure you have someone, one, who was elected, and two, has experience on the council and can work with people. One of the risks of an elected mayor is that you could get someone who doesn't have connections and doesn't have experience, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but there are some risks involved with that. I believe that this is a waste of taxpayer money. We have a hard time meeting our budgets, and I don't think we should be spending taxpayer money to fund either for the mayor or the special elections. And as contentious as our community can be about trying to fill a vacancy by appointment, I would expect that we would have quite a few special elections, which is a crazy amount of money in my book. I also don't think we need to use our city attorney to write arguments and rebuttals. Our city attorney is not cheap, and I don't think we need to use his time this way. Again, I think our current system is adequate, and you can tell by how many people showed up that I don't think people really care that much. They elect our city council to do our job. I think the mayors we've had in the past have never had a problem with any of them. I don't see why we have to change the system and incur additional expense. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Kelly?
I was the other no vote, and I will be a no vote again tonight. I think that a majority of a sitting city council can pick the leader that they want to guide them through the business of the city. The mayor is the spokesman for the city. His vote or her vote is equal to everybody else's. And over the 30 years that the city has been incorporated, I would say for the most part, the city has functioned just well with the way the mayor has been chosen. There's been some personality differences and what have you, but they were just in the minority. I just don't see how we can justify spending $100,000 possibly every 2 years to elect a mayor. And like Councilperson Burrow said, in Atascadero, I don't think you're ever going to get away appointing somebody with the way Atascadero does business, and I think you would be required to have a vote. And I'm been here for 35 years, been here since the city got incorporated, and I really don't have a problem with what's gone on in the past of how the mayor was chosen. I know over the years there have been people who have been the highest vote getter that were not the mayor, and I really don't know if they would have represented the city with what the goal of the city was in lieu of their own personal agenda. I think would have been pushed more than what the majority of a city council was. So I'm perfectly satisfied with the way it's going and would be against the expenditure of $100,000 every year.
Thank you. Council Member Clay?
Yeah, well, that's just an assumption in the first place. I think four council members would be smart enough to figure out that they need to appoint a mayor, and I don't agree with you at all. The other thing of it is we lose some clout when it comes to our position in the county. When we rotate mayors all the time, the folks at the county level see a different person all the time, and we lose some clout in regards to some of the committees that we're on. And I think the people will do a heck of a lot better job of picking their leader than the council itself. And I totally support this, and I'm a little surprised that we're at this point right now.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Thank you. Well, I was actually on that council that moved to a rotation. I was in the first 3 months of being on council 8 years ago, supported each council member being able to support their own planning commissioner, and that had never happened before. And we looked at mayor rotation because we thought it would be fair for everyone to have a chance. But I also have learned a little bit in the last 8 years that we are at a disadvantage countywide. We are the only city in our county without an elected mayor. And what I've noticed, having been on council a little longer now, is we participate on many regional boards and some statewide boards. And for folks, often we are there representing our city the best we can, but often it's the mayor is appointed to these positions over multiple years, and it makes a big impact for funds coming into our city. For example, this year I've been on council of governments long enough to be elected president on a regional body. It makes a difference if you can be involved with some continuity, and that's what the mayor position allows, that we have are in a growing disadvantage countywide, as now every other city in our county has adopted elected mayor. Yes, there are risks with who you elect. That's true for every council member. It's had an impact on revenue streams for our community. When we pick a city council, we make decisions that have a big impact on our community, and we need to take it serious, mayors and council members. We've seen changes in philosophy, and you have to decide as a community what you want, and a majority of council does make those decisions. So I think it's important to have an elected mayor, and I think we've, of course, always look at worst-case scenarios. Well, we really haven't had those. We've usually reached an agreement, and the times we've talked about where we've had to select a replacement council member, that's not because we had an elected mayor. We have to do that in any case. And those same scenarios, the same potential costs could happen for any number of reasons and have already happened in the past. So it's a little bit of a pretend argument to say the elected mayor is going to create a problem any more than any other council vacancy that could occur and has occurred in the past. So I think we need to focus on consensus building like we need to on everything, because when we work at consensus, we save our community a lot of money, whether it's working out a replacement for a mayor position or every other decision we make. So I don't think that's an issue. But fundamentally, I think on a decision like this, we're not really deciding. What we're saying is we want our community to decide. We're putting it on the ballot Let our community decide whether they want this or not. They'll get to hear the pros and the cons, and they will decide. They will tell us, and I think it's important to hear that input from our community.
Thank you, Tom.
Councilmember Kelly?
Oh, just to interject, if this doesn't happen, rotation is not the only option that you have. Say after the next election, since there's not going to be another election for 2 years, I think we would have the option, if we wanted to choose a mayor, that it doesn't have to be for a year. We could choose a person to be a mayor for 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years, I would think. And I would have no problem doing that if there was somebody sitting on the council that I had the confidence in that would be a good representative of the city to making that decision. And I can't see spending all this money when we don't have to.
Any others?
Well,
Councilmember Clay?
We've talked about that in the past, Bob, before. You're on, you know, the two-year thing, you know, versus 1 year and so on. But what's wrong with giving the public an opportunity to vote and let them hash out all this stuff? And if they say, no, we don't want elected mayor, why, fine. If they say, yes, we want elected mayor, we want...
...of mayor makes that have any more clout than any others. I'm sure people respect you just as much for being Tom O'Malley as they would if you were Mayor Tom O'Malley, which you have been in the past.
They usually think I am mayor. I have to keep correcting.
Right. So...
Thanks.
So I think longevity is not a really great reason. The history of appointments is poor. I've been in the situation of being the next highest vote getter and being denied and having to run another campaign, spend more of people's money to get elected to this seat. So I really don't believe that system works. And unfortunately, our council could come up with a policy of how to replace the vacant seat. But if the newly elected council doesn't like that, they could throw that out and we could end up with a stalemate again, 2-2, and still have a vacancy. I think the current system, it shares the extra work that it takes to be mayor. And I think when we all take that seat, we have a duty and we have a lot of pride in being a mayor for our city. But it is extra work. And when it rotates around, it helps share that among the council members and gives everyone a little bit of experience. And I know you guys don't care, but there is no extra compensation for being the mayor. And if you are a younger person who's working and you know it's going to take at least 20 to 30 hours a week to be mayor, that's going to be a tough call to make if you're a breadwinner in your family, which for most adults, there are two incomes in every family. So once again, I don't think we need this. And I think the public looks to us to make decisions on what gets on the ballot. So if we put this on the ballot, they're going to think that the council thinks this is really important. And obviously, some of us don't.
Any other comments?
Well, sure. I mean, if you're a young person and you've got a lot of obligations, then certainly you're not the one that should be running for mayor. The mayor should, you know, represent our city, should be someone that goes to all the functions, that when he runs, he accepts that responsibility, that he's going to be the face of the community. And to me, that's important. And, you know, again, I'm not a candidate for mayor, but I'm certainly want to see the public have an opportunity. If they turn it down, why they turn it down, but at least give them the opportunity to vote on this. And, you know, I haven't changed my position. And
any other comments? I guess I will. The people elect this person. I think that the people have an excellent judgment when it comes to these things. They understand they need to have a person that can work with others. Council members can be a little bit more divided in their opinions or lean one way or the other, but the mayor is given a unique position of trying to bring peace and to bring the decisions together. And so I would like to get this on the ballot to allow the public to have this opportunity. And if they don't want an elected mayor, this is the time to say it. This is a good time because of the November 2012 election coming up to get this on fairly inexpensively. At that point, we can deal with whether we need an election or others. We can't appoint them or we can. I think that the city council has the wisdom to decide to try to work together to appoint someone rather than to go to a special election.
Roberta, could you make the motion then?
I certainly can.
Yeah, appreciate
I will
it.
Do that. I will move that the council adopt draft resolution A, calling for the holding of a general municipal election to be held on Tuesday, November 2nd, 2010, for the election of certain officers. And we adopt draft resolution B, requesting the Board of Supervisors to consolidate a general municipal election to be held on November 2nd. And that the council adopt draft resolution C, setting priorities for filing written arguments regarding the city measure and directing the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis. And that the council adopt draft resolution D, providing for the filing of rebuttal arguments for the city measures submitted as at municipal elections. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second that motion. And that does cover the mayor situation, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, motion by Fonzie, second by Clay. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
No.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Can I vote yes to A, B, and no to C, D? Or is that not permissible? If it's not permissible, it's just no.
Well, they list, let's see, ooh, I had to look again. I think at least
A, B. A, B is just to have the election, and C, D is regarding the ballot measure. Is that correct?
But the ballot measure language is in those also.
Then I'll have to vote no.
Sorry. Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Fonzie?
Yes.
3-2, motion passes.
Thank you, Marcia. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our next item, unless someone would like a break. Are we good?
We're good.
We're good. Okay. All right. Let's move on. This would be the potential municipal code revisions, issues, and options. Staff report, please.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Staff has assembled a potential list of municipal code text amendments that we believe the council may be interested in any changes. The purpose tonight is to get direction from the council on those items that you want us to prioritize making changes to. Any of these changes will require a formal code text language to be developed. That'll be taken to the Planning Commission for review and recommendation, and then it will come back to the City Council for formal action and adoption. So what we're going to do, I'm going to walk through each of the 16 issue areas, give you a brief description of what the issue is and some possible council options, and then I believe it would probably be better if there was any questions on an individual item is to bring them up as we go through them rather than to try to backtrack through them all. So the first item on the list was the issue of conditional use permits. Right now in our code, we have a requirement that all non-residential development, so that means commercial, industrial type buildings that are 10,000 square feet or larger, automatically require a conditional use permit, even if the building is for what would normally be an allowed use. So the size by itself becomes the use permit trigger. Now, this allows the Planning Commission to review larger projects in town, and they get the ability to review the architecture, the landscape, the signs, and the site layout. So there's some benefits to that review process. The downside of it is it is another review process. It costs more money and more time for the applicants, and it could be discouraging some economic development in the town. So there's a couple options for the council. The council has the option to increase or eliminate the trigger. So we could change the 10,000 to a higher number, or you could get rid of the number altogether. And then the second item is to create a design review committee comprised of council and possibly commission members to deal with some of this appearance review. So as we take the Planning Commission formally out of the review process, it may make sense to create some other committee that can move more quickly and flexibly to deal with that issue, because as these projects become larger in size, it's really beyond staff's ability to deal with some of these larger projects and deal with those sorts of issues.
On the review committee, are you recommending that on 50,000 square feet and above, or just period?
What we're recommending is that we would create the review committee to review projects that don't go to the Planning Commission. So this, anything, let's say, and be done with it. It won't require all the noticing and procedure and agenda packets and that sort of thing.
So it's a recommendation, basically, and if they don't agree to it, then where are we at?
Appeal to Planning Commission.
Appeal to Planning Commission. Okay, thank you.
And do you see this as taking a good deal more time for an applicant to go through the process, since they may ask for plan changes or other, and it would slow down the process for an applicant significantly?
Well, it's the process that we do at a staff level right now. There's a review and discussion about the appearance of all projects, but that happens at a staff level. But as we get into larger projects, like a 40,000 square foot commercial building, it's really beyond the ability of a single, you know, assistant planner to negotiate that sort of thing. We need another group to deal with that sort of review and discussion, and we believe that some sort of design review committee would be the appropriate way to do that.
Councilmember Bayrou.
So does this design review committee have any weight? Because, I mean, Planning Commission, if there's an agreement, then the applicant has to do whatever they agree to do. But if this is just a committee, will they be able to change a project, what they think is better for Atascadero, or they're only suggestions and they don't have to accept it?
We can't issue a permit until it's cleared appearance review. So right now, it has to get through a staff-level appearance review. What we would do is have a committee be in charge of the appearance review. So at some point, the committee would have to approve the appearance review or deny it. If they couldn't come to some sort of decision, which I see is fairly unlikely, that doesn't happen very often, that the remedy would be for the Planning Commission to make the final decision. But typically, you know, we're talking about colors, materials, finishes. There's usually a lot of flexibility there, and, you know, we don't really have a problem with it, you know, not being able to be worked out typically.
So if we change it to a higher amount, for, let's say, if projects are less than 50,000 square feet, there will be no ability for the public to give public comment?
Correct.
Okay.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Well, I guess my concern overall is to allow as much flexibility and streamlining as possible. But if I may not be understanding what you're saying, but currently a CUP is required for over 10,000 square feet.
Well, already all the projects are required to go through appearance review. It's just a question of who's going
staff
to do
level,
it.
Staff level, right.
Staff versus the committee. We're looking to set this up similar to how Paso Robles does it, where it meets on a regular basis, so the time frame isn't an issue. And then we have basically commissioners and councils with the direct, quick ability to make decisions on projects rather than staff have to try to negotiate potentially what the commissioner council may want to see on a project.
I guess my concern, and one plus that I'll mention for you, Warren, is I think you've done a very good job, and I think staff have done a good job with some of the projects we've had in terms of design.
I agree.
And I think what's been a problem in the past is sometimes if you get us involved, we might change our minds project to project, and it becomes less predictable to the building community. And it seems like it's better if we can kind of agree on, as we've done in the past, palettes or styles or a few things and have some general parameters. I think your staff have taken direction well. You heard from commission and council an idea of what we like, and you've implemented it. I'd be concerned that we might be making it less predictable in this process. So could you comment on how Paso gets around that, apparently?
Well, they've been doing that process for a long period of time, so I think everyone's used to that. I think they have some consistency with their members, and they have some guidelines that help with the interpretation. So it seems like that's worked out fairly well for them here. Staff here has struggled with it, honestly. There seems to be, especially as we get into the larger commercial projects, there is a lot of pressure and a lot of money involved in these projects. And for an individual staff member to have to make a decision that may require a project redesign is getting more and more difficult for them to do.
Okay, so so I want to understand your recommendation is there'd be a committee that probably would have two council members and staff and two planning commissioners, and then they would review a project, and if they make recommendations, the builder could adopt that and go forward, and if they didn't like it, they'd appeal to the Planning Commission, be kind of in the current system. Is that basically it?
Yeah, I think the way I see it happening is the committee would be to bring it to the committee, get feedback. The committee would probably say, yeah, this is okay. How about a little bit of more of this? Change the color here. Then the applicant would know, okay, well, I'll go do that, and then would likely bring it back in a final form for final blessing. So it would probably be more of an iterative process where there'd be a little bit of back and forth to it rather than, you know, like a planning commission hearing where you spend months drawing things, hoping it's going to be okay, then get to the meeting and then realize, oh, it's not quite right, and you're back to the, you know, starting over. So it would be a process that would happen earlier in the process, be more flexible, informal, and allow things to get hopefully resolved more quickly.
Thank you.
Councilmember Clay.
So, Warren, you know, in the past, you know, are staff going to be overwhelmed because there's a council member there, or maybe somebody that's, you understand where I'm coming from? That's my concern. That
well, this will be set up that is the forum, that clearly this is a meeting where the council and commission have been given the job to make these decisions. Staff will be there to explain and support you and your requests. But this will be a forum where the ground rules are clear that we're looking for the commission and council to make these decisions.
Would the applicant be part of the meeting?
I believe that we'll set those up so that they can attend if they want.
I see.
Mayor, Councilmember Mayor, if I could, this is a great discussion, and this is about the issue. But tonight, you have 16 of these. This is number one. And what we were really hoping to do is try to identify which ones you wanted to have this discussion about. Which ones should we spend this energy so we could give you? This is sort of a sampling.
I think you're right. I think it's obvious this one has a great deal of interest, yeah. So we want to make this a priority, I believe. Is there a consensus on that?
I think it's number one on the list tonight.
Very good.
And it should stay number one.
I agree. I never liked the 10,000 square foot.
Let's move on to number two. Quick.
I believe this came up because projects got approved and City Council felt like they wanted input. So I think that's kind of where this 10,000 square foot and 50,000 seems like really big. Like the City Council never got to look at the Albertsons project or something. So I think that there is a history of why this 10,000 square foot was there.
Right. So we need to hear that.
And those are the things we'll bring back to you if that stays number one.
Item two.
Okay. Item two was personal service use death squad services. We have heard from members of the community and Main Street that there is a concern, especially about the number of tattoo parlors in the downtown, which are being opened as personal services in that zone. So what we're proposing tonight is the option for the council to consider basically splitting personal services into two separate uses, where we would create a new restricted personal service definition, which is what the city of San Luis Obispo has, and then we could take things like tattooing and body piercing and whatnot and move those into the restricted zone, and then we could limit where the restricted zone would occur, and that would be the second council option. If we were to create the restricted zone, would you also want to restrict the areas? So we may not allow it in the downtown, but maybe we allow it in the retail commercial zones on South El Camino Real. So those are kind of your options on the personal service definition. So what we're recommending is that we do create that definition, that we not allow the restricted personal services in the downtown, neighborhood commercial, commercial office, or the commercial tourist zones, that we consider creating some sort of staff level administrative use permit process to review those requests as they come in, and then that we also add day spas and state certified massage therapists back to the regular personal services as allowable uses in all the zones. So that's basically what staff's recommending on personal services.
I'm okay with that, number two.
Let's kind of clarify this, and perhaps you could help us out with this, Warren. Are you trying to get us to choose three or four that are the most important and prioritize this, or what is the goal of this exercise?
I think at the very end of the exercise, I'll lay out – well, let's just jump. I'll show you where we're going with this whole thing. So in the end – we've kind of divided all these code changes into basically three categories. So there's the easy fixes, which we could do real quickly without much staff work. And that would include the second unit size limits, the accessory structure definitions, the mobile home definitions, the interim church uses, setbacks in the multifamily zones, and interior setbacks. So we can do those easily.
Can we agree on those right now, then?
Well, before you agree on those, let us get through the report, because we're hoping that you don't agree to send us off to work on all of these. We don't have that kind of capacity. If you can identify some of the priorities.
Okay. So tattoos and restricted personal use?
Two for me.
Three.
Tom?
Tier two.
Two?
Three.
Three. Two. Yeah.
Okay. Did you get it, Marcia? You want us to do it again? Just hold up your fingers, everybody.
I'm sorry. Then you want it for each person? You want to know which tier it's in?
Well, then we can tabulate them at the end.
3 2s and 2 3s. Okay.
You don't have to do it by person.
Number one, I think, was 5 1.
Oh, okay.
Is this making it harder? How do you want us to do this? We'll follow your lead.
Go to 3. We voted.
Okay, the majority say tier 2. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to item 3.
Okay.
We didn't do item 1. But
well, item 1, I think we were all number 1 on that, weren't we? CUP? Let's give it a vote.
I think it's a 2 for me personally. But.
Okay.
Okay.
So item 1.
So that's a high priority.
Bob, where are you at, Bob?
You're a
1.
CUP? 1, 2, or 3?
I think that's the most important one.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I think it was
4 ones,
all
1,
1s, and except for Ellen.
Okay.
Let's move on to 3.
All right. One. So back to 3.
3 is a 1.
Okay, second unit development standards. Currently, we have restrictions on the size of second units. It's 1,000 square foot on lots over a half acre, 800 square feet on lots under a half acre. We do have the ability locally to increase the size of these second units. The state definition for a second unit is a maximum of 1,200 square feet, so we wouldn't recommend going over that number. So the council options would be to increase the size limit up to 1,200 square feet for second units. We just need direction on whether you want to do that for all lots or just lots over a half acre.
Question.
Okay.
Question. Go ahead, Mr. Kelly.
When the mobile home sales yard opened up a year and a half or 2 years ago, time flies as I'm getting old, we had a meeting up there and there was a discussion about the square footage for our ordinance that would correspond with the size of those modular homes that are being constructed. Was there ever any follow-up on that? Because I know when this went through, I was on the Planning Commission, and most housing units are built in 2-foot increments. And I know when I was building houses, 836 was what worked out, you know, for a 2-bedroom house instead of 800.
Yeah, we met with Sal out.
So what I believe as part of this second unit ordinance is that the architecturally it has to be the same as the existing house.
No, it doesn't have to be architecturally the same. It does have to have, you know, a pitched roof and some sort of architectural grade siding, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to match the house. That's what I remember.
It doesn't have to match the house.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And personally, I'd like to weigh in that I'd like it to be 1,200 square feet on any size lot. If it fits, we want to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah, if we can get direction, that'll help us set up the ordinance.
I'm okay with that, but I question the half acre. 800 square feet is pretty good size, but.
I live on a half-acre lot, and depending on the size of the main house, a 1,200-square-foot house could be
Right, okay. And there are standards they have to meet.
I understand.
There's still other standards that come into play. So.
Okay.
And then as far as putting it on the list, I think this is a real important thing.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it should be one of our priorities because I think there's
Mike on?
Very little, because there's very little applications, aren't there, for second units?
That's the reason. That's the reason.
Well, no, it's economics because I think when we had a seminar one time, and if you want to build an 800 square foot second unit on your house, on your property, of course, we got some other issues we're getting to tonight, it's roughly $46,000 worth of fees. That's why you're not getting built.
Bob, could I just say something, Roberta?
Yes, you may.
It's an easy fix. I mean, you understand what I mean?
It's just my personal opinion.
I know.
I'd rather see him dig into the CUP and get it done.
Well, for me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
For me, I don't think we should allow larger ones on smaller lots. And I'm okay with increasing the larger lots to 1,200 square feet. But I think it should be a tier 2 because we can't have too many tier 1 items.
Well, what I'm understanding is all we're going to need to do is change the number.
That's
online.
Nothing.
Do you need to do a lot?
This
else?
Is an easy fix.
Okay,
yeah,
thank
I'm
you.
I'm thinking this is
okay. So let's rate it 1, 2, or 3 in terms of priority.
1 here. Okay, so we got 3 1s and a 2 and a 3.
Okay, let's move on to number 4.
Could I get just some direction? Do you want to do 1,200 square foot max for all lots, or do you want to keep 800?
I think we need to discuss it some more.
Yeah.
So we need to bring forth options, and we'll vote then.
Could you come up with a ratio, depending on how big the main house?
That's what I was.
So we have a variety of accessory structures that are allowed in town, from second units to garages, workshops, art studios. We have a number of definitions that regulate which ones can have a bathroom and which ones can have a shower and how big they can be. We have some problems. As we developed these in 2005, they work fairly well, but there's a couple problems with them. What we're recommending is a series of clarifications and cleanups there that'll make it a little bit easier to interpret and apply, and also provide a relief mechanism where the Planning Commission can just grant relief to any of the standards through a CUP process. And this is one of what we consider one of the easy fixes.
Okay. Well, really? Want to go a 2 then? I don't know.
It's all right. Give it a 1.
And I won't give it a 2.
Okay, we got 3 2s and 2 1s. 3 2s and 2 1s.
Okay.
Who else did a 1? Ellen, were you? Well, right.
And on this one, can we get some clarification on studios that you and I had spoken,
yes,
whether that meant art studios or studio apartments?
Okay, yeah, we'll clarify that it's art studio.
Okay.
Okay, the next one, number 5, is individual mobile homes. So right now we have an antiquated section on mobile homes that should actually refer to them now as manufactured homes. It requires them to be a minimum of 20 feet in width. In talking with Sal at the manufactured housing place, there are some really nice ones that are now 15 feet wide that would work well as second units, so we believe it would make sense to change that standard.
Is that an easy fix, Warren?
That's an easy fix.
We got the ones. We got 3 1s already. Yeah. 4 1s. Tom, where you at?
Yeah, give it a 2.
Oh. 4 1s.
When you bring it back, can you clarify if this is on a permanent foundation, so it's a second unit?
They have to.
Or these are single,
they're
units?
They're always. We only issue permits
they aren't
for
in the park,
permanent
so
foundations.
Permanent foundation.
It does not apply to parks, in other words, is what I'm trying to get at. Mobile homes and parks sometimes are not, often are not.
What we issue permits for, they're always permanent foundations. Sometimes they're jack systems. They're not concrete. We still consider them permanent foundations. So the foundation in a park or in a single-family lot,
okay,
will likely be the same. We consider them all permanent.
Good enough. All right. Let's
and just
on.
For process, we'll return this list to you, but so far you've voted lots of ones. Okay, well.
Item 6.
We got confidence in you, Wade.
Well, we
calculate fees and requires us to apply them equitably throughout an area. That report was originally done in 2002. So if we were to look into changing the fee, we're going to have to go back and redo the AB 1600 study, which means we have to hire a consultant that does those things to do a new analysis. There's not, you know, we can't guarantee that we can reduce it, you know, 20% or 50%. It's going to be a function of how the formulas work and what kind of findings we can make. So that's why this is kind of a heavier lift. We're going to have to hire a consultant. This will take some time to get through the process, but it is something that we can do if the council directs.
A question.
Councilmember Clay, go first.
Okay. In regards to affordable housing units, would there be some compensation there? Would that be a factor in the reducing the fees?
That's something we can have the consultant look into as some sort of mitigating or beneficial factor if these are affordable units. Most of the second units are outside the redevelopment agency, so the agency couldn't help to offset any of the fees like we do in the downtown zone. But it's possible the consultant could figure out a way to do it. And we think if we had the consultant, we would be able to work with him and get the number down. We just don't know how much.
What about cost on the consultant?
We don't have an estimate right now.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yeah, when we first looked at second units, we did have a grace period or a grandfather-in period because we're trying to get everything in conforming, and every now and then you still find one out there. Is there a way to take a look at that? Is something that you're just trying to correct a mistake in the past versus new construction where folks know what they're getting into?
Guest house.
I think, you know, that could be, this would, you know, there's a lot of options, there's a lot of issues here. If you identified this as a work program, we're really going to split this off and probably come back with, you know, a follow-up report just to look at all the different issues and options. There are a lot of potential units out there with different issues about when they were built and what the codes or requirements were at the time. The council can be as creative as they want, probably, in trying to figure out, you know, different ways to approach the fees on these.
Councilmember Brereau?
This
roads and bridges, then you would have to update the study to incorporate those into your new fees.
Okay. I mean, I certainly feel for people who have second units or have inherited second units, but we do have to remember these impact fees are very important to our community to fund things that we have planned for in our long-term maintenance of our city. And unfortunately, you know, we always want to give a break to affordable units, but when you think about who lives in affordable units, those are probably maybe some of the highest use of services that we have, either the elderly or young families. And those are going to be people who probably need more of our community services than maybe some of the middle-of-the-road people do. So I'm very reluctant to reduce impact fees, and so I would suggest that we leave the impact fees as they are.
I'll just comment on that, having been involved when we, you know, I was always a believer in full cost recovery, and like you say, they're impact fees based on additional persons coming to town, creating increased needs. But what we're talking about when you look at grandfathering in existing units, if there's something that's been in existence for 20 years, it's already occupied. There are already people have been there, and we've already factored in those costs. And so that's where then you come in to correct a situation. Maybe you want to get some code upgrades and make it a safer environment for where folks already are. We've already been expending the costs for services, so there aren't any increased costs. When you have new construction, you bring in additional people, and it factors in. So that's why I would make a distinction, as we have done in the past.
I would like to suggest that we forego the consultant. It's too expensive at this time. We don't have the money. But if we could go back and reconsider the grandfathering and the grace period, again, at no cost, that might be more productive.
Mm-hmm. How was the grandfathering? It wasn't at no cost, right, Warren?
Well, we had the amnesty program.
Right,
and the amnesty program, there was different relief it provided, but you had to, if it was an illegally converted structure, it had to pay the fees. The exception was if it was a guest house, if it was permitted as a guest house but converted to a second unit, those guest houses actually had paid a cap fee when they were legally permitted years ago, right. So we didn't charge them a new fee because it had been calculated in. But a lot of the amnesty units actually did have to pay a capital facility fee.
Right. I would disagree that, you know, second units are small sections
of property. You could have a house next door that has five bedrooms in it. And the there is no increase in the impact. It's almost like water meters. I think if the property is zoned single-family residence, that you have paid the impact. You've already paid for it. The other thing is, if you want to build one of these secondary houses, you could put a breezeway in there, and it, all of a sudden it's not really a secondary house. It's an addition on there. I mean, you can beat the thing. I'm just trying to be fair.
Right. Well, and I just mentioned the point of demographics. It used to be growing up, you might have a pretty large family. Now you may have a couple of small families in those two residences, and it's actually considerably less people counts. And I think you have to consider demographics.
Where are we
going
to put it?
Okay, we're getting a little off track. Let's kind of drag this back, and what direction do we want to give staff? Do we want them to go ahead with the consultant? Let's
Well, and this is another one of the complicated ones. So if you list it out as a priority and it comes back as one of your top priorities, then we can bring it to you with a work plan and say, okay, this is what we would do about it. Because otherwise we're going to get tied up in each one of these individuals. There's so many tangents to go down on each one of these.
Because of that, I'm going to have to give it a two, or it's just, it's something I don't know that we can deal with right now.
What are you, Roberta? I got...
I'm like a 2.5 here.
Okay. We got 3 2s and 2 3s. 3 2s and 2 3s.
Could you get me here as a 2?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Thanks.
Okay.
Mayor Fondi, did you say 2 or 3?
2.
Yeah.
So that's...
3 2s.
And what, Tom, you were 3?
If we can't do 2.5, I'll round up.
Okay.
Ellen
okay.
and myself are 3s. Okay.
Let's move on to number 7.
I'm going to change that to 3 just because we've got so many 1s.
3 3s.
Just
two,
because.
Two.
All right.
Seven. Okay. Item number 7 is the downtown district height standards. This is what we just talked about with the La Plaza project. The issue is the 18-foot limit on El Camino Real from the creek to Entrada Way along the freeway. The council's directed us to move forward with removing that. So we are intending to incorporate that into this code update this summer.
Yeah. I'm a 1 on that.
I would like to see us wait until we actually get an application for one of those pieces of property, because I think if we look into the future and with the application that we actually have right now for the La Plaza, it seems that
we can wait, given all the other things.
I would say a 3.
So a 3 if we don't have...
Well, I have a question for Warren. Do we have buildings down there that are 55 square feet, and which ones are they? Are 55 height?
Well, I think the tower on the Carlton is probably 52 feet. The majority of the buildings are around 44 feet, and I think the La Plaza Theater was going to be roughly 40 feet with towers of like 55 and 72.
So
I think when I was on the Planning Commission and the Carlton went through, I remember there was an issue with the fire department and getting up there. I want to say it's 53 feet to the roof. Is that...
Now we have a ladder.
Is that about right?
Okay, let's prioritize this and get on.
It's still a 3.
1, 2, or 3.
I think it's important to change.
I go with what Bob's saying is higher priority if we have a real project, but I'm going to put it at 3 for now.
Right. I agree.
Boy, oh boy, am I different. Okay.
Okay, let's move on.
3 3s, 1 1.
4 3s.
Okay, we have a requirement for automatic fire sprinklers in commercial buildings and when there's an addition to them. Right now, we have a trigger of a 10% increase in size as a trigger for an addition requiring fire sprinklers. We have received some feedback from some business owners that they believe that that is discouraging them from doing certain additions. And we've gotten some requests to change that, to increase it somewhat. So we are considering bumping that up so that there's a little bit different formula. So some of these smaller commercial additions where the building isn't already sprinklerized wouldn't have to go back and re-sprinklerize the whole building.
Is it a tough situation? I mean, what's it going to take?
Is it easy? It's a pretty easy fix.
Easy.
Okay.
I have a question. If you build a new commercial building, does it have to be sprinklered?
Yes.
Right. Okay. I think I'm going to support the fire department on this and say to leave it as is.
Okay, let's give it a priority then. Okay. 1, 2, or 3?
2.
Tom?
So 3 2s, 2 3s?
3 2s, 2 3s.
Okay, let's move on to number 9.
Okay, this is an easy one. This is just a cleanup. We have an old section in the code that creates this interim church use in the commercial zones. Our previous city attorney advised us that you couldn't have an interim use where you expire a CUP after a certain number of years. 5-foot setback really doesn't make sense. And as we do the plan development overlays and infills, we usually allow a 15-foot setback there. So we're recommending that we change the multifamily front yard setback to 15 feet. It'd still be 20 feet for garages so that the car could fit in the driveway. There's also kind of this sliding scale about the distance between buildings and multifamily zones based on the heights. We don't think that's really necessary or doing anything but confusing everybody, so we're recommending we just go to a flat 10-foot setback between multifamily buildings. So this would be an easy fix, and this is both items 10 and 11.
So is this one that if we give it a 1, you can just change the number and we come back and vote on it? Or are you going to...
Could I ask a question?
Go ahead, Bob.
Nothing's that easy. Okay.
This is for multifamily residential?
Yes.
What happens if you have a fill-in project, like where somebody has, like on, I think, Santa Ynez or Santa Isabel over here, where you have the older house in the front and somebody's built two in the back, or vice versa, where the whole neighborhood has got a 25-foot setback, but all of a sudden you're going to have one house that sticks forward by 5 feet. Is there any way, when we say multifamily, we can say it has to be a certain amount of units?
We wouldn't recommend that. No. You want a simple rule. So if you're in the zone, this is the rule.
Yeah. Well, I'm just kind of thinking what it could do to a neighborhood if you look down the street and everything is 25 feet, and then all of a sudden you got one that sticks up 5 feet. Just aesthetics.
If it's zone multifamily, eventually they're all going to be sticking out, okay? Simple as that.
Just brought it up. One.
Okay. One. Let's go.
Well, okay. Could this be, just a question, are there any projects pending or likely to be? Because is this something we could say if you actually have a project submitted, we could give it a one? Otherwise, it's come on, Tom. Not immediate?
Yeah, there's multifamily projects right now that
okay,
these will affect.
Okay, then I'll give it a one.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to number 12. Ones. We've done 10 and 11.
I think 11.
When Warren says it's easy, we give it a 1. Did you notice that?
Yes. So we're at 12, right?
Yeah. All right. Number 12. We have a definition called recycling and scrap that is somewhat antiquated. We're recommend we just update that to include outdoor storage, impound lots, and dismantling of materials. We think this is an easy fix.
All right. Let's do it. Five ones.
Okay. Move on to mobile vendors.
So we can clarify what the rules are for mobile vendors for business licensing purposes.
Could you give us an example of what mobile vendors would
be? Ice cream man.
Strawberries.
They'd be there more than 15 minutes, though.
Well, I understand.
And, yeah, like somebody that delivers coffee, ice cream man, different sorts of food services. We don't want somebody setting up for a couple hours, putting tables out. But if you show up and deliver something to an office and then drive off, that would be basically a mobile vendor.
You know, the problem is everybody's trying to make a living out here and they're starving to death, so I don't know.
Well, can I ask a quick question about,
yes, go ahead.
Is the strawberry person legal? Because I've had a lot of people ask me that.
The one that not after 16 minutes.
Not after 16 minutes, okay.
Get your strawberries quick.
Okay, so is this an easy or a hard fix?
Well, we think it's an easy fix because it's already another section. We're just trying to make a clarification. But if you want to change the whole definition of mobile vendor or really get into a debate about it, that would be tricky. But if we're comfortable with our existing definition, then it's easy.
Okay, let's take the vote.
Three. Let them sell strawberries.
Okay.
There was two ones and...
Okay, let's try it again. Finger...
Oh, okay.
Let's do it.
Three on that one.
I'll go three, too.
I think we're tied here. We got two threes, two ones, and one two.
We're all mixed up.
I'll change mine to a two. Does that make a difference?
Yeah, I'll drop it to a three.
Okay.
Try again. Yeah.
All right.
For more than the, there we go. There's three threes and two twos now.
All right.
Okay, we got it. Three threes.
I think that was four threes.
All right.
Matters.
Planning Commission creation and composition, number 14.
Yeah, number 14. So that would deal with the potential of changing the number of commissioners from 7 down to 5, so it better mirrors the city council, with probably each council member just having one direct appointment. This is probably a more complicated change, so we're looking for direction on this.
Personally, I think we ought to leave it alone.
Yep.
It works.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Oh, I'm the one who put it on there, just so you know. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, if you look around City Hall, we have very little staff. And the more people you have on a commission, the more staff time it takes, more resources it takes. And this could be a way of streamlining our operations. And I would, if you do it with a planning commission, I think Parks and Rec should be on the same field. So that's...
Wouldn't want it to be a priority, but I'll give it a two.
Give it a two.
I'll give it a four.
Okay. Let's move on to 15, use of non-conforming lots.
Okay, this is just an easy one. This is a clarification. There's some language in our use of non-conforming lots. It's not clear about is confusing about whether or not you can build a house on a, in certain situations. We want to clarify that there are no restrictions on the use of a non-conforming lot due to size. So this is just a simple text cleanup.
I have a question. Well,
go ahead, Jerry.
Well, everybody's got one up, but 80% of the lots are non-conforming in some of these areas, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I got my finger up one. Yeah, here we go.
Okay, moving on to 16, street, road, and driveway maintenance.
Okay, this is the last one. This is a more complicated one. This would deal with the issue of road maintenance requirements. So pretty much anytime we do a development project in town, we end up with either a new street or some sort of shared driveway or shared parking court, something that requires shared maintenance. And the city policy is not to accept anything for maintenance. So what that means is it's the developer's responsibility for figuring out a maintenance mechanism. And that usually consists of either one of the city assessment districts, like Rochelle was talking to you about earlier tonight, or a homeowners association, or some sort of CCNRs with some sort of funding mechanism, or a road maintenance agreement with some sort of funding mechanism. And there's trade-offs and benefits to each one of those. And depending on how you set it up as a developer, you can make that work pretty well for yourself, or you can spend a lot of time and money with lawyers and create a real mess out of it. And right now, we don't have any real strong city guidelines or standards to help the development community even figure out how to sort that out, so they have to do that on their own. So the question is does the council want staff to put some energy into trying to develop some guidelines and standards to help developers figure out which ones of these might be the best way to do it and how to set these up?
Questions first?
Yeah, just as a comment, the roads in Atascadero, that's always been an issue. And I think I would like to see some guidelines put in there where the city is involved on managing the maintenance of those roads, because I know we have some homeowners associations in town and CCNRs where the finances, let me say, have been abused, and there's no money.
From someone they can hire a consultant in the private sector to advise them on that, so I don't really support this item.
Well, yeah, I just had the concern that I don't think the city can take on any additional road expense at this time, and as you say, there are road standards that folks can comply with, and they can do it on their own.
Now, just a question, is this triggered by Castle Rock's problems with the roads, or is this other issues as well?
No, this is just a issue that was brought to our attention, but
so
it has nothing to do with the Castle Rock
problems
issue.
Immediately, that it's a high priority from your perspective? Or?
I guess there's some smaller development projects with some common driveways that have had some problems, so we're aware of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are we going to go back through and kind of prioritize our number ones for you? Because I know you felt like we got quite a few ones. Or do you satisfied with what we're doing here?
As soon as we get a vote on 16, we'll talk.
Okay.
Okay. What's the vote on this one?
Three.
I'm not supported at all. I don't even think it should be on the list.
I say that's a three.
So that makes it a five.
Hello,
Larry. That's the last one.
So here's kind of the overall summary table. So I don't know if we want to go through now and double check that we got them ranked right, or you want us to put the numbers next to each one?
Yeah, I could help with the ranking on the second unit one there.
The screen
is
closer.
Number three. Is that right? Second unit sizes?
Yes.
And this isn't going to be as easy as I thought. Really, the on my numbers, I think we all did a little bit different. I don't have the numbers on number two. I just collected all of your votes. So the easy language change ones all got just five. So they would be the top priority, and they're relatively easy to do for us to bring back with some comments. So then the two following that would be your top priority would be the CUP item and the mobile home size item.
I thought the second unit one was.
The second unit, are you talking about the
No,
fees?
The size of the second unit.
The size of the second unit would be then the third priority. It would be the next one down.
I thought it was ahead of mobile homes myself.
Where was personal services?
Personal services is the one I didn't get the numbers.
Marcia has all the numbers.
I do. I took the majority. And interior setbacks.
Right.
And number 12, the recycling and scrap definition, or tier 1.
And number 15?
15 I had as tier 2.
Yeah. It got 5-1s.
What was 15?
Oh, it did? I that
5-1s, it was the use of nonconforming lots.
Yeah. So that's a 1. Okay.
We weren't changing that at all, though, right?
No.
So, how about downtown height limit? That got low.
Low.
So we'll call that a 3. And the fire sprinkler exception?
I thought that was low.
That was pretty high.
Is that number 8?
Which one is it?
Yeah, fire sprinklers I have is number 2.
2.
It's a tier 2.
Tier 2.
Okay. And mobile vendors, did that end up as a high also?
Only because it was easy.
You said it was easy. You had it in the financial code, so yeah. It wasn't a real high one for anybody.
No, I have it real low, actually, too.
Yeah.
I have 2 number 2s, and the rest were 3s.
I have it lower than the...
so we'll call that a 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the capital facility fee update for second units?
Well, if you're calling that a 2, there's no 3s then.
I have 1 number 2 and 4 number 3s.
I have it as a 3. It was item number 6.
A 3.
I have it under tier 3.
Okay. Item number 6. So item number 6, 7, 14, and 16,
right,
would be the tier 3.
Tier 3.
Okay.
You want to know what those are?
Yes.
Item number 6.
Second
is capital facility fees. So that's
capital fees.
Capital facilities fees.
That's a third tier.
Third tier.
And planning commission composition?
Is the that was number 4? What?
No,
that's
change.
That's 14. Yes, that would be under tier 3.
That would be tier 3.
And the street, road, driveway maintenance is tier 3. And the downtown district height limit standards was 3.
Three. Okay,
we
already got that.
Okay.
Okay.
So I've kind of got them up on the screen with numbers in front of them in terms of where they fit. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of look like what the council was thinking?
I can't see it, so it looks pretty good to me.
Okay, Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, I'd like to maybe just go down to the commission and see what your number 1 is out of all of them. And in my case, it's the CUP. I think that's a real strong message. If we can get that cleaned up, we're larger development.
Do something for you these next few months.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
Let's move on.
Is that sufficient for you, Warren?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Council
and he'll get us in. They'll get us a copy of this, right?
Okay. Council announcements and reports. Anybody?
Well, guess what? Yeah. I mean, what am I going to say, Tom?
Eat local.
Yeah. Let's do it, folks. Okay. I got some great restaurants out there, and I liked Wade's presentation early on, and let's try them all. There's some good ones.
Very good. Any committee reports? None? All right. Management reports. Oh, we already got that. Let's see. Individual determinations or actions?
They haven't updated the votes in a long time. There's no new information. So
I saw Marcia raise her hand, so go ahead, Marcia.
I do have listed to just comment on the modified format for council and commission minutes. I just wanted to briefly discuss it. I know there's not many people left here, but at least since we're being videotaped, it will be helpful for the public. In Atascadero, as in most cities, we have used the format of summary minutes, and the process basically is a summary of what takes place, definitely the action taken, the public comments made, things like that are included. Several years ago, the city hired a secretarial service to help us, me, with these minutes and commission minutes. But last year, with all the budget issues we were dealing with, that was one of the contracts that we terminated. So I'm back taking the minutes, which is no problem while I'm here, but it does take a few to several hours, depending on how many hours of a meeting it is, to listen to the tape again and fill in all the blanks. So it does affect work significantly for myself and the other two staff members that are now doing Planning Commission and Parks and Rec Commission. The state law requires that the minutes list the action taken at these meetings. And so with the advancement in technology, with videotaping our meetings now, other cities are doing the same thing. They're reducing the impact of the taking of minutes to action minutes. And what that basically means is that it will list mostly just the action taken by the council or the board and the redevelopment agency or the commissions. There'll always be exceptions if something unusual happens or if someone's voting no. I do still feel strongly that we need to list why if they say so and things like that. But any public comment, we'll just list who spoke. If anyone wants to know what they actually said, you can look at the videotape, which I think most people are doing now anyway, even though we have the minutes, because my minutes are very brief and just vote on something because how you felt a certain way. That would be listed. Okay. But if it's because most your items are 5-0, motion passes, everyone's approving it, so there's not a reason to say, have all five of you say, I think I support this project or whatever. Yeah. So, yes, it would be pretty much just the action taken and any other pertinent information.
Okay.
But
that's okay with me.
And just a question regarding Parks and Rec. Theirs is just an audio tape. Is this an old tape recorder with a spool?
No, it's actually the digital tape recorder that I'm using here now also.
Okay, yeah. So it's fairly durable and will be usable.
It goes on to the on the server.
Councilmember Kelly, did you have a question? Okay. Do we need to vote on that, or that's
no,
it?
No, you don't. And I did have one other brief announcement for the election coming up. As the last election 2 years ago, I conducted a workshop before the candidates' nomination period. I just wanted to announce that also, that because we have the two council seats and the city clerk and city treasurer up for reelection, four-year terms, the workshop will be on Thursday, June 24th at 7 o'clock in this room, and I'm encouraging anyone in the public who is either interested in running for council or clerk or treasurer or is just even interested in the process. It's a good opportunity to come and hear about what it entails to run, the paperwork involved. I will discuss how the government runs, what the council's responsibilities are, et cetera, and answer any questions people have. So I encourage anyone who has an interest in that to come. I have a lot of handouts to give people, too. So hopefully people will come and take advantage of that opportunity.
Thank you, Marcia. Thanks. I think that's great.
Will that be in the paper, too? Will there be notices?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Unless there's something else, city manager, anything that we need to know before we go?
No.
Very good. Meeting is adjourned at 9:35.